kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
I actually got a full, like, real work week this week instead of, like, having days that I don't work much. Like, I got straight up 20 hours. Like, I got a lot of work this week.
I have a full work week, and 20 hours do not go hand in hand. Oh, what's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. Joining me, as usual, CJ. CJ, how you doing?
I'm okay.
Good times.
Tired.
Been a crazy, crazy weekend, so.
Has it?
WrestleMania, man. Fucking
dream. Yeah, I didn't get to watch that yet, because I got scheduled for a work, like, event at 8 to 9.
Have you at least, like, heard all the news and stuff?
No, I'm purposely avoiding it so that I can watch it tonight.
I can't even talk about stuff.
Nope. I'm trying to avoid it until so that I can watch it tonight.
Have you at least heard the big tag team return?
Yes, I sadly, because my family was watching it while I was gone, when I got back, I came out just in time to see them win.
Motherfucking Hardy Boys are back!
Yeah, I came back just in time to see the winning of that, and I was like, no. I mean, if I would have saw them come in and enter, I would have knew right away, like, there's no way they're not winning, so it wasn't a big deal that got spoiled.
Oh, I lost my shit when they came out.
It's been going around for weeks that they're, like, rumored that they would come back, so.
Yeah, there were rumors that they would be back. I don't think anyone expected it to be at WrestleMania.
Yeah, that was quite quick.
Like, the big talk would have been, like, the Monday after WrestleMania. Because that's when big shit happens. Like, WrestleMania is the season finale, and the Monday after Raw is, like, the season premiere, and they got to get all the big shit to hook you for the next year.
It was pretty good, though. And from what I've seen, like, the news, I hate that I've seen so much, but it seems like a pretty good event.
It was a pretty good show. It seemed to start off really well, and it just kind of, like, went down as it went. I don't know. It was good, though.
Heard there's a long, drawn-out proposal.
My only gripe with that is how it happened, like, the end of the match. I don't want to get into it and ruin things for you.
Yeah, okay. But, I didn't know that he even had a match. I just knew that happened.
Yeah. I mean, the whole build-up was Cena and Nikki against Miz and Maryse.
See, I haven't been keeping up with WWE because I kind of got bored of it. I want to see this big pay-per-view just to watch this. But I haven't kept up with anything WWE-related.
I think overall NXT TakeOver was a better show. But that seems to be the norm because TakeOver was that fucking triple threat tag team match from TakeOver. Might be one of the greatest matches I've ever seen.
That sounds pretty cool. I know that was Saturday because my family was also watching that.
Oh, it was so good. It was so good. Anyway, we have a ton of shit to get to on this episode. We have a chat with Virtual Air Guitar. Aki Kanerva of Virtual Air Guitar came back and talked to us about Air Guitar Warrior. So that'll be later on in the show. We also have a handful of guest reviews that we're going to get to, but we should kick it off with our own stuff.
Yeah, we should.
We're going to start things off with Rain World, developed by Video Cult, published by Adult Swim Games. It released March 28th on the PS4 and Steam for $19.99. You are a slug cat. The world around you is full of danger, and you must face it alone. Separated from your family in a devastating flood, you must hunt for food and shelter between terrifying torrential downpours that threaten to drown all life. Climb through the ruins of an ancient civilization, evade the jaws of vicious predators, and discover new lands teeming with strange creatures and buried mysteries. Find your family before death finds you. This is a tough one for me to review, because the... who were we talking to last episode where the game was really good? It's just the sheer difficulty is like the lack of hand holding and direction and anything there just holds it back.
God, I don't even remember what it was.
But yeah, I said, you know, that reminds me a lot of Rain World, which we're going to be talking about in a upcoming episode. And well, this is the episode. I'm going to start off by saying Rain World might be one of the best looking pixel visual games I've ever seen. It is a beautiful world, beautiful visuals. The Slugcat character might be one of the most adorable things I've ever seen in my life. Going into it, I thought this was going to play a lot like a Metroidvania with a lot of exploration and combat and platforming. And it's more survival than action.
Oh, like, interesting.
You start the game and there's very, very little direction. There's like a little floating bug that might sometimes point out directions that you gotta go or tell you what things do. And the goal is basically to get through the world and survive and not die. And when you die, you lose like a lot of progress. It basically, everything in the game is a one-hit kill. So if an enemy gets you, you're dead. I have lost, there's been times where I've lost over an hour progress due to a death.
Oh, that's brutal.
Which is just like a kick to the balls in a game like this, where you basically, you fight and claw to survive and work your way through these platforming sections, dodging these enemies that can come after you. Because combat-wise, there's not much you could do. At least in the time I've played, I'll fully admit that I have not gotten too far in this game because it is just punishing. And to just die and lose everything you've done is such a draining and, you know,
yeah,
setback there. It's soul-destroying and crushing.
Yeah, those kind of games are the kind of games that make me quit, just because it's like, if once you lose enough progress, it's just like, yeah, fuck this, and I move on.
I honestly, one of my friends, Devin Riley, has been streaming the game on Twitch, and I've enjoyed it a lot more watching him, because I'm not the one who's been the frustrated one of dying and losing progress. This, like, I really, really, really wanted to enjoy this game and love this game, but just... It is such, it's a lot like Dark Souls, a survival Dark Souls, but in a 2D platformer Metroidvania-ish, like the open world style exploration. There's just very little hand-holding, and it is punishingly difficult. And even, you know, I would try to go on different sites and see their opinions of, like, maybe I'm just doing this wrong, or maybe I'm just bad at this. Turns out that, yes, I am just bad at this. But the general consensus is the difficulty is just so punishing and unforgiving that a lot of people have kind of given up on it.
Wow, so it's just too brutal.
It seems like the people who stick with it, there's a rewarding experience there, but I have been unable to do so. It would not be fair of me to give this a deny it rating, just because I can appreciate the game that's there. I can appreciate the visuals that are there, the overall atmosphere of the game, but just the brutal difficulty is... It is absolutely not for everyone at all.
Yeah, the game, it whatsoever. Sounds like it's a game that's probably not for me, somebody who doesn't enjoy difficult games like that.
Not at all. Yeah, it's a tough one. I think the people out there who find it and can love what it is are going to have a great time with it, but for the most part, it's just too much. So
it seems like the masochist kind of game.
Very much so. So it is a try it in every way possible. Watch it, possibly. But, yeah, honestly, it wouldn't be fair of me to give it a deny it, because it's not a bad game. It's just not for me.
Right. That makes sense.
All right, next game to talk about is called Wonder Boy Returns, developed and published by CFK. This one released March 30th on the PS4 for $14.99. It was previously available on Steam, a classic action masterpiece. Arcade game Wonder Boy has been remade into HD. Food is important for a primitive man. Collect all food before your health gets depleted. Defeat all enemies, avoid all obstacles, and head over to save Tina. We got our friend Chris Taylor involved in this one. Chris, how are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing good. Been playing too many games lately.
Haven't we all? So based on the description, despite the name Wonder Boy, this sounds a lot more like Adventure Island. I know the two series are kind of like intertwined in Japan, aren't they?
Okay, so here's the story with that. Wonder Boy was, I think, originally developed by Sega for the Master System or the SG, the Sega Console 1000 or whatever, an early pre-Genesis Sega system that nobody cares about.
Oh, the Master System?
Yeah, but there were like three Master Systems in Japan.
No.
Like, the one of them came over here, but there were like two more that didn't. So, without Googling that, I've talked myself into an informational trap already. it's for one of those systems. And so they developed it. It was really good, really hard. Nintendo and Hudson, you know, between the two of them, probably Hudson, was like, boy, we really like this guy that's really good at shooters. He can, like, shoot, like, I don't know, 30 times in a second or something like that, just... a guy called Takahashi-san, and they were like, we love this guy, like, he's such a pro gamer, like, he's like one of the original pro gamers, and a good personality, and so they were like, let's make a video game out of him, well, we don't have any money, so let's not develop a game, like, an original game about him, let's just steal this one from Sega, and put Takahashi-san in it, and now it's called Adventure Island.
Nice.
It's literally a sprite swap. Like, they are the exact same game, the original Wonder Boy and the original Adventure Island. The only difference is that Adventure Island in Japan has a celebrity endorsement. And, of course, since America never heard of him, they were like, Master Higgins, he's a guy. So they changed it to Master Higgins. So then, and, of course, Wonder Boy came over here much later on the Master System. But by then, either people had not played... I don't know if anybody in America played Wonder Boy before they played Adventure Island. I certainly didn't. I played, like, three Adventure Islands before I ever played Wonder Boy.
Yeah.
So...
And then something else to keep in mind is this is not Wonder Boy the Dragon's Trap that is coming out later. This is...
yeah. Yeah, I was... Go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, this. I don't know if this is, like, a company trying to like, get in on the action of the Dragon's Trap remaster coming out with this remaster, or if they were, you know, both in the works for a while. I'm not sure what the story is, but two completely different Wonder Boy games from two different developers.
Yeah. Okay, so here's the thing. So, Wonder Boy the Dragon's Trap is a remake of Wonder Boy 3.
Yep.
I believe... I don't know if it's being ported by the same people. My research didn't go that deep, but the reason
Dragon's
I know that...
Dragon's Trap is being developed by Lizard Cube and published by Dotemu.
Oh, so those are all different people, huh?
Yeah. And neither of them are CFK. So...
Wow. What a puzzle. We've uncovered for ourselves here. So I believe that Wonder Boy 3 is one that came over here as Wonder Boy in Monster World. I don't remember. Boy 3 Monster's Lair. And
it's like 90 Wonder Boy games, and none of them are the same.
It's so hard. Like, I have this... The first Wonder Boy game I ever got was Wonder Boy in Monster World on the Sega Genesis, and I have no idea which one that is. apparently, Wonder Boy 3 The Dragon's Trap came out originally on Master System as well, so yeah. Maybe this is Wonder Boy 4. I don't know. And the other thing is that not only that, they ported the Wonder Boy license over to TurboGrafx at some point. So the TGCD system had like the Dynastic Hero, which is a whole different thing, but also it's just Wonder Boy.
Oh God.
And yeah.
Anyway, we've gotten nowhere so far. So tell us what Wonder Boy Returns is.
So Wonder Boy Returns is a it's basically an HD like graphics enhanced cartoony, exactly just the original Wonder Boy, like, and slash Adventure Island. Everything is in the same place as far as I could tell. So it's like, as I was playing it, because I played the original Wonder Boy, I played the original Adventure Island almost to the finish. I think I got to the second to last stage. So I was able to breeze through a few stages on this one, and it felt very familiar. So I was, except that the collision detection was a little better. So I suppose there's improvements here or there for today's, you know, soft-boiled gamers.
Which is good.
Which is good, because that's what I am now. being well into my 30s now. Actually, though, I say that, I actually beat Super Adventure Island on the Super Nintendo for the first time this year, so that was fun.
Proud of you.
Aw, thanks. But yeah, like, that's, and it's funny how the Wonder Boy confusion works, because when you told me I was going to play Wonder Boy Returns, I was like, yes, I got to see that at PAX. I didn't even get to play it, but I saw it. And you're like, no, that's Wonder Boy the Dragon's Trap. And I was like, oh, they've done it again. Also, what I understand is they're coming out with a Monster Boy in the Cursed Kingdom.
I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is that I really detest that title, because it was originally, not originally, but prior to that, it was called Monster Boy and the Wizard of Booze.
Oh, God.
And that's the best. Why didn't they keep that? Anyway. So, yes.
And that game, just to fuck everyone else up some more, is being developed by Game Atelier and published by FDG, who, again, are not CFK, they are not .emo, and they are not Lizard Cube,
so,
nor are they Sega.
Am I, like, did the license for Wonder Boy just, like, go up on public for sale on, like, an eBay auction or something?
I don't know.
This is crazy. Man, $25, I could have made my own Monster Boy remake.
Possibly.
I would have called it Flying Hamster 5. Anyways, the Dynastic Rodent. So yeah, as far as the review goes, it's kind of a review, kind of not. So if you've not played Adventure Island, what it is, or the Wonder Boy, what it is that you basically are a guy, a character that just sits there and runs in place. And your job is to run from left to right. There's the left entrance, right exit. You just keep running and keep jumping, because your life slowly ticks away like a timer. In fact, your life bar basically is a timer, because one hit from anything will kill you. So the idea is that you run and jump from one end to the other, platforming, all that business. You can pick up axes to throw. I guess they're more like tomahawks or bones. I don't actually remember. It depends on which version, I suppose. And, yeah, at the end of every four levels, then you fight a boss. And the bosses are actually usually fairly easy. I didn't get to a boss on this remake, though, so I couldn't tell you how the bosses are in this one. But, apparently, this was, this particular one, like, CFK got the original creator to, like, overlook things. Like, the improvements and such, so I imagine it's probably going to be pretty faithful to the original.
Yeah.
So at the end of just far too many of these levels, like, you know, as you get towards the middle of the game or towards the end of the game, then things just start getting just hellacious. You've got traps like all over the place. Food becomes scarce. You become very frightened and impotent. And that's part of the experience. That's completely normal. The total hopelessness and direness that you'll feel towards the end of this game will is the quality experience. that one would expect from a game of this ilk. I mean, considering it came out on the Master System first, like, that system is known for just brutal video games.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the basic thing. Like I said, in this remake, your characters are more cartoony. They're all HD. They look great in 1080p. And, like,
I say, it's a very pretty game. I love the art style of it.
Yes. I really like the direction they went with it. And you get to kind of, you know, they have that little sneak a peek at the unlockables. So I suppose if you beat the game with the main character, then you get to play as the girl whose name I've already forgotten. Linda, you said?
Possibly.
Possibly. And then there's another unlockable, and it's the original pixelated hero. That's only hilarious. You know, yeah, scaled up to the game size. The music's remade on all, like, real instruments or just super fancy MIDIs. I couldn't actually tell, so that means that they sound good. And it's the same tunes, more or less, but they're much more, they're fancified. So it's very nice to listen to as a game. Kind of conveys a tropical sort of, I suppose, primitive style of music. And yeah, like, it's basically, it's a great game to get people into this wonderful, insanely tangled up series.
It basically seems like it is the original Wonder Boy / Adventure Island with a gorgeous new coat of paint, some extra unlockables here and there, and an awesome new soundtrack.
There seem to be a lot of unlockables. Yeah, there seem to be a lot of unlockables. I wasn't able to, like, even really get a preview of them, but there's a lot of things locked up. So, and the thing is about this game is that it's a favorite for speedrunners. So, you know, if you get good at it, then you can keep going through it and unlocking it. And, like, once you get the general hang of it, like, you know, people really like to, you know, get that extra challenge in. Because it's a game that once you beat it, it becomes a lot less challenging. And so you want it to ramp it up a little more.
Nice. So for $15, what do you think?
For $15, if you are considering any Wonder Boy remakes that are coming out, I mean, some of them may look a little prettier, but go ahead and start with this one. It's basically a must play as far as really hard platformers go. Like, it's kind of your training for the games of the early to mid 80s. Like, if you want to buy the other games because they look more interesting, you're going to get in there and you're going to find out that these are, like, really hard, or maybe something about it will confuse you or bore you or something like that. And it's because you didn't play the original. So get this game first. Build your collection off this.
And it makes sense. You know, you start at the beginning and work your way through.
Exactly. And like I said, it looks wonderful on those big HD TVs, and I couldn't ask for more as far as that goes.
Awesome. And then hopefully later this month we'll be talking about Dragon's Trap as well. Fingers crossed.
Hooray! I'd love to.
All right, well,
because it is a best game.
Yeah, I'm excited for that one. So, again, fingers crossed on that one. But, Chris, thank you so much for your review of Wonder Boy Returns. Do you have any final words on the game?
Nah. But, I do have a plug.
Go for it.
Oh, yeah, well, if anybody wants to watch me play video games, I now do a daily stream every day on my Twitch channel, which is twitch.tv/liarexaggerate, like the Earthbound character.
I thought you were changing it.
We'll see. I'm basically kind of waiting for a complaint from Nintendo. If Nintendo says don't, then I already have a name planned up that I might switch to. But all that aside, right now I'm playing through the top 20 Super Nintendo games, and probably by the morning after this episode airs, I will have started Chrono Trigger.
Nice.
Yeah. So it's just a casual thing. Just come and hang out with me and chat and stuff. I'm so lonely.
Cool beans. But yeah, we're not going to include that plug. That's too much.
Okay.
Have yourself a good one, Chris. And thank you once again.
You too. Thanks very much.
See you.
Bye-bye.
Now that Chris is gone, we can move on with our lives.
Finally. Jeez, it felt like he was here forever.
Wonder Boy. Next game to talk about is called 88 Heroes, developed by Bitmap Bureau, published by Rising Star Games. This one released March 24th on Xbox One, PS4, and Steam for $14.99. 88 Heroes is a chaotic 2D platformer that is as fun to watch as it is to play, where each level completed or untimely death brings a new uniquely skilled hero into the action. With just 88 minutes to complete all 88 levels, you'll need every one of the 88 heroes to stop the dastardly Dr. Hate destroying the Earth. Are you up to the challenge? CJ, were you up to the challenge?
What? My mouth, like, it had to decide if it wanted to burp or not, and it was weird. I was, like, stuck in mid, like, animation.
Yeah.
Anyway. Now, I only have one thing to say about this game, and that is that it is an 88 out of 100, and so I think we're good.
That sounds like a perfect score for this game.
I'm joking. No, but this game is actually kind of, really fun. Like, it's weird because there's 88 heroes in this weird odd platformer, and each of them actually do play differently, and you have to just get through each of the 88 levels, which get progressively more difficult, and just try to make it to the end without losing your 88 heroes. Every time a hero dies in a mission, that's it, he's gone.
Yep.
Like that takes up one of your lives and that hero is dead. And sometimes, if you pick up enough coins, you can get that hero back by just choosing like one out of the three options they give you to revive. And yeah,
just three of the randomly dead ones, you get to pick one of them.
Yeah, exactly. There are some heroes in this game that feel like they were just purposely made just to die immediately. Like, there was one character that the X either attacked or just killed themselves. And so immediately I spawn, go to attack the first enemy, and I die, and I was just like, okay, well, he's dead.
Oh, no, that's the Fortune one, isn't it?
Possibly.
She flips a coin, and she either goes directly to the exit or dies.
Oh, that must have been what it was. Yeah, that's right.
And it's just she's how I got the achievement to beat a stage under 3 seconds.
Oh, you must have to use her for that. No, I died with her immediately.
Nice.
And it's just weird. Some of the characters feel like, obviously, they had to make some characters that I don't know if they spent as much time working on, simply because once you get to about like 20 some characters, it's like that's a lot of characters in a game, and then they have to do 60 some more. It's like, it feels like a lot of the characters are just like, we have to come up with something because this game has to have 88 heroes. That's yeah. The name of it. It feels like they came up with the name first and then the characters.
It's possible.
But that's not saying it's a bad thing. I do enjoy the game. There are some characters in the game that are much more OP as well. Like, there's the Bat-Bot, which was my favorite character, because when he's moving, time goes. But if you stand still, then time freezes.
Yep.
And on top of that, he flies. So you have full like movement with that character. Whereas like other characters, you have to walk and jump and stuff like that. This character, you could just move anywhere. And then you have a couple of characters that have like explosives, so they can blow outside of the map and then just cross through the entire map and then go to the exit, which is pretty cool.
I thought the Yoda like character, the hero, I don't remember what his name was. There's like a lot of knockoff characters in this. But yeah. The one that was a knockoff of Yoda, I thought was, like, super powerful.
I can't remember that one. There's so many characters, and I honestly, I can't remember a lot of them because I died pretty much immediately with some of them.
Oh, yeah,
depending on the levels.
There's a lot of useless ones. of useless ones.
They're really hard. There are also some ones that are just funny to use but aren't really practical, like the one that's basically the snake from Snake or Centipede or whatever. the one that just you gotta move like you would in that game, and if you hit a wall you die.
Yeah,
so that's the end of that character. And of course I had him on a level where it was like completely just twisty and turny, like there was walls all over the place, there were small hallways. I killed him off pretty quickly because I just didn't like playing as him, so I was just like, screw this, I'll move on to the next character. The laser cat is great.
Oh, yeah.
Because that laser destroys pretty much everything. There are a few characters that are actually really, really amazing in this game. There's also the basketball player, which is extremely tall, but he's extremely powerful because the basketball he throws can actually break those like laser walls and shit.
Yeah.
And so that made him super useful. Sadly, I killed him somehow. Oh, it's because of those bouncing blue skulls that if you touch them, you die. And he's so tall that I couldn't get under the bouncing blue skulls. He was too tall. Like, I just couldn't time it because it's impossible. I'm guessing
you threw your ball at one of them and missed and the ball was gone.
Yeah, because you got to go pick the ball back up. And so that just killed me. I was like, well, there's nothing I can do there. Too bad he didn't have the ability to like jump like a slam dunk style and jump over them. I think that would have made him more useful. There are a lot of levels in this game, and I can say that I only got past the office before losing all my characters. So the office is like the first stage, and
it definitely gets tough, especially if you get a bunch of the shit characters in a row.
Yeah, and well, I do like what they did with the fact that if you lose all your heroes, you can like try again from the level you were on, but that means that your last character. The last character to die will always be your character that you have, and you'll always be at one life left, which means if you leave off with a really shit character, you're screwed. Luckily, I left off with Batbot, so wasn't too bad off. But there are some levels that he's not as useful as I wished. Like, some levels he doesn't play as well as others. But at least I didn't leave off with, like, Glass Girl, I thought was a really awesome character until I realized that you fall far enough, and she has double jump. So if you fall far enough, she just busts.
Yeah.
Nice. It's like, that's creative and cool, and I didn't expect that to happen when I double jumped too far, but it was like, at the same time, I was like, God damn it, I was right at the exit. I just didn't expect that. But it is a cool, unique character.
Yeah, I will say, one of the things that the cast of characters is a detriment to is... some of the achievements where you have to get so many perfect stages.
Yeah.
Like, if you keep getting shit characters, there's no way you're getting perfect stages, because perfect means you beat a stage without anybody dying.
And it's also going to be, what I imagine is the hardest achievement is beating the campaign or the 80 heroes mode, which is the main campaign, with like 16 heroes left. Yeah. I feel like that's going to be quite difficult, considering I went through all my heroes within just the office and a couple levels of the sewer.
Yeah.
And all my guys were gone, so I feel like that's going to be a tough one. But the rest of the achievement list is actually not too bad. They throw achievements at you like crazy.
Oh, God, yeah.
Like, literally, at least once every 5 minutes, 15 gamer score was popping up somewhere. With this game, I'm a little bit disappointed that they didn't do the odd achievements. Like, I hate that, but with this game, it would have been made perfect sense if everything was worth, like, 8 gamer score or 16 multiply.
I'm more annoyed that they didn't have 88 achievements to earn.
I'm not as annoyed about that because of the amount that would require. Like, just coming up with that many achievements would be quite difficult, I'd imagine. But I do wish that there was a... There was some more throw-ins with the 88, considering, like, maybe instead of 14.99, you did, like, 18.88. Or just 8.99 if you put it on, or 8.88 if you put it on sale sometime.
Yeah, that'd be neat.
Just anything with the 8s would be cool for this. But I suppose it's nice at 15.99, or 14.99, I think that price suits the game well. I do really like it. The art style is pretty old school. But not too old school that it makes you feel like you're playing on an NES. So that's kind of nice. Overall, I mean, I enjoyed the game a lot. I know you actually played it too.
Oh, God, I love this game. It's just so goofy, so over the top, so funny. I love that the villain of the game is basically watching you the whole time on a monitor, and he'll just make fun of you every time you die.
Yeah, he will. Or if you get past the level, he'll get mad about it. Especially if you get a perfect one.
Yeah. Or if you die, how there's like fucking confetti falling and he's celebrating that someone just died.
Yeah. Overall, I mean, the game is hilarious. I think another thing that adds a little bit of the difficulty is the 88 minutes to complete the game.
Yeah.
Because I think I went through like 40 minutes with The Office. And there's four stages. So that would mean that I would have needed like double the time that I got in order to make it.
Yeah.
So
overall, though, I think for $15, it's a buy it. I'm not sure what your verdict is.
Yeah, I mean, I got to give it probably a buy it as well. I mean, the very least I could give is a very recommended try. So, yeah, I'll stick to a buy it. That lives with me. I'm okay with that.
Sweet. See, I'm right, like always. Yeah,
this not game always, is
awesome.
But yes.
This game's this one's pretty awesome. Good.
I like the random characters and just the craziness.
All right, next game to talk about is called Pamela, or P-A-M-E-L-A, whichever way you want to go with this. Developed and published by N-V-Y-V-E Studios. Released March 9th on Steam Early Access for $24.99. Explore, fight, and survive as an awkward sleeper in a fallen utopian city ravaged by a horrific disease. With an array of high-tech weapons, highly immersive UI, full-body awareness, and much more, Pamela delivers an intense and unforgiving survival experience. We got our good friend Wood on the case. Wood, how are you doing today?
Doing good. Doing good. Just got off playing a few bit more hours of Pamela.
Cool.
Like I just, yeah. So, yeah, it's yeah. Cause my initial impression was like not too high. And then I died.
Like in real life you died?
Not in real life, but like I died in game while I was playing. He's like, I don't get what's going on in this game. And then it died. And I was like, oh, okay. So now I got, a much more better feel of what the game's supposed to be.
It's interesting that death is like the game changer for you. Like what is the game? Talk to us about the game.
All right. So basically it's, you're given like almost no context. Your character just wakes up in cryosleep. You get out of there and everything is just wrecked. Like it's, there's stuff all over the place. And, you know, everything's in emergency lighting. There's barely any explanations. You go to these hollow vid things, because everything's holograms in the future. It just is, right? And it's you're getting little snippets from the AI, which I believe is named Pamela. That would make more sense. And you're trying to like piece together what's going on, and it's like falling. It is absolutely a fallen utopia. Like it's supposed to be this high tech. Oh, we can cure everything. We can cure broken bones in hours. But there's some sort of mass breakout of some disease that has caused people to just go crazy.
Interesting.
Yeah. So as far as the gameplay goes, like it's, and this is probably my biggest beef, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing.
So it's like nearly every other survival game on the market where the game starts up and it's like, go. What am I doing? Fuck you. Go.
Pretty much. Actually, yeah, I think that's a good way of doing it. It's, well, a good way of putting it, I should say. Because, yeah, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. I don't know what the end game is besides just, all right, just survive as long as possible and get as far as I can somewhere. There's so far, it's still in early access, so there's about three zones that still aren't open yet.
All right.
So, yeah, you're supposed to explore, get better weapons, get better gear. And if you die, you lose all your gear, but you get experience points in order to do upgrades on your character from there.
Oh, so it has a lot of roguelike elements to it as well.
Yes, yes, it is very... Oh, yeah, I would say it's roguelike.
Where you kind of need to die to progress further in the game.
I think so. That's what it looks like. Or you just get good. It's hard to tell because, like, if I knew where you're supposed to go... I feel a little bit strong, like a little bit stronger about like what is going for it. Cause I'm not sure what I'm supposed to be doing. they take some like very interesting decisions when it comes to exploring your environment. Right. So in order to open anything up or hack anything, you can't just walk up to it, press E and you're good to go. No, you have to walk up on it, scan it with your scan tool, have it tell you like, oh, there's an item in here, or there's no item in here, or you got to hack it, and then you get to interact with it. They add this extra step in there. I'm not entirely sure why. I guess it's just so you don't waste your time on like trying to open everything up.
hacking and opening shit and nothing is in there.
Yeah, I think that's the intent. It's like you just scan it and it's like, oh, I don't have to waste my time on these like 15 crates when this crate actually has something cool.
Actually, so kind of like that, because I can't count the number of times like I'm playing Fallout and I open everything and 90% of things are just empty. And I'm like, my time has been wasted.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess in that way, this is actually a better system of doing it. So that's cool. But yeah, it's, and you get this opportunity to be able to like pick up objects into your inventory and then redeploy them somewhere in the world. And I think it's supposed to be like, oh yeah, I can use this to charge batteries, or I can use a solar collector to charge batteries, or I had finally made it to a point where I actually deployed a bed and said, cool, now I can sleep. Great. Right. And that's as far as I got, because this game explains nothing. Yeah, it explains absolutely nothing.
I think that's one of my biggest gripes with the survival genre in general, is that there's so little direction in so many of the games.
Yeah, and it's... Yeah, that's easily my biggest gripe about this game is there's no direction. I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. I don't even have an end goal. Like, I need some sort of direction in my life, and this game doesn't provide it to me.
Well, the beauty is that it is early access. Based on the Steam page, they're planning for it to be in early access for 6 to 9 months. So it's very possible that that kind of stuff can come in further down the line. They might be trying to get all the mechanics working now. And yeah, let's see. How's the full version? Full version will include several new areas, weapons, items, enemies, and most notably a fleshed out non-linear narrative.
There we go.
The full version will have an actual narrative to it, which I guess that's one of the perks of early access. You're basically giving the game a test drive and helping with development.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a bad program as long as you're like, you know, interested in the game. And like, yeah, for me, it's like, it's honestly like, if we weren't for like the up to like that first death, or like I can actually start figuring out, oh, this is the mechanics of the game, I get it now, like I would have just like pawned this off as like, wow, this is actually survival horror with a set like that's trying to have a really creepy like aesthetic and setting. And yeah, my first hour was bored. Really, really bored. Because I wasn't, again, when you don't have anything to do, it's like, okay, then what am I supposed to do? And besides, eat this random apple I found off this corpse, or just drink some moonshine. I don't know.
Oh, man.
Or punch the hell out of this not zombie.
Hey, punching things is always fun.
It can be.
So, given that it's an early access, I know the price right now is $24.99. They are saying that the price is planning to increase as development goes along, so it's possible this could end up being like $30 to $40 when it's all said and done. For the $25 investment right now, what are your thoughts on it?
It's an interesting game. That's pretty much the best way I can describe it. It's hard for me to recommend it at that price. Like, honestly, I would almost recommend waiting till it's actually done being developed before actually sinking any money into this right now, because it's as interesting as it is, it's kind of boring.
Yeah. Do you think it's the premise and everything there is at least worth people keeping an eye on it to see how development goes and how the story gets implemented and all that stuff?
I would say so, because the story itself seems very interesting, because you're following the only story bits you're getting is essentially the recordings of the AI that's running this place, and how it's funny because it adds a very human element, even though it's a all-encompassing AI.
Yeah.
Of someone who's like trying to hold together this Eden. It's actually, the place is actually called Eden, right? Trying to hold it together and just watching it fall completely apart out of this he has control, and it's kind of depressing. So, I mean, in that aspect, you don't have the typical, like, oh, AI finds a problem. The problem is human beings kill all humans. No, it's actually you have the AI running an entire compound. A third element comes in and just wrecks everything. And it's just like, oh, and you're just kind of having to deal with that right now. And the AI is just powerless to stop it. It's a very different type of sci-fi setting. I kind of dig it.
Nice. So, yeah, the beauty about us doing early access stuff is we don't have to give it a definitive review because the game's not definitive yet.
Yes, so that's pretty nice.
It sounds like, if nothing else, this is at least worth keeping an eye on and seeing how it progresses over the coming months. Because I know the overall response on Steam is pretty positive. So it seems like visually and stylistically there's a lot there. They just need to implement the story before any kind of firm decision could be made.
Yeah, I think that's the best way of putting it.
I could read between lines. Oh, man. Well, Wood, thank you for checking this one out for us. We are definitely going to have to get an update from you in the coming months when more stuff is added to it.
Definitely.
Hopefully you'll still be digging it around there and things progress well. The risks of early access, I guess.
Yes, that's true. But it is what it is, though. I mean, that's why there's early access, and they give you a heads up that, hey, man, the game's broken.
This ain't done, so keep that in mind when you drop your money.
Yep.
Do you have any final thoughts on the game? Anything to wrap it up?
It's, you know, honestly, I like the visuals, and I like some decisions they made. Just I just need purpose in my life, and it doesn't provide right now.
All right, next up, we are welcoming back our good friend Pernell Vaughn. Pernell, how are you doing today?
All right, just getting over a case of gamer's headache, but ready to talk shop. How about yourself, sir?
Doing all right, doing okay. I'm sure people are wondering why I'm announcing who you are first instead of the game. You know, like we usually do, like, oh, we're going to talk about this, and joining us to talk about it. It's because we have a fairly big lineup with you today.
Yeah, hit me with a big wallop, but yeah, a good one at that.
We're going to start it off easy with Blossom Tales, The Sleeping King, developed by Castle Pixel, published by FDG Entertainment. It released March 28th on Steam for $14.99. Explore a huge open game world in classic action-adventure fashion. Prove your worth by fighting through monster-infested dungeons to save the Kingdom of Blossom. Let's kick off with this one. What did you think of this one?
I'm going to do something outside of my usual scope, and just before even talk about the game, say it's worth your money. It's good. It is good. To put it in perspective, this game is on Steam, okay? Now, I have a Steam account, but I very rarely make use of Steam. I'm not sure why. Maybe it's a personal bias. I can't even fathom what it is. I can't describe the why. I just don't. And yet, when I started playing this little game, I would come back to it, even with a really crunched week. I found time to come back whenever I could, and I just dabbled around and roamed the map that they had. And the soundtrack is really good, as in I was listening to it at my job. Nice. On my headset through Bandcamp. It was done by a guy named Visager, Visager, and he's out of New York. And it's legit. Like, it's a legit game. The premise is basically a grandfather telling his children a story. And once it jokingly reveals that he's already told them about Link's adventures in Hyrule, he decides to tell them another story that is fairly similar because Grandpa is lazy. But it comes with a lot of little perks to it, too, in a sense of saying if you get the Breath of the Wild and you enjoy Breath of the Wild, but you did kind of wish it was like a classic Zelda game and not this Zelda in Skyrim land, this is pretty much your game. Because as it goes, the grandpa's telling stories about a little girl named Lily, who is conveniently named after his granddaughter, who's gone her quest to become a knight. I'm sorry, a dame at first, until the kids go, hey, we don't like that idea. She should be a knight. She should be Sir Lily, Sir not Lily. Dame Lily. And then the grandpa corrects it mid-story to go, oh, whatever, fine.
It's what's a dame?
Sir Lily. Yeah, what's a dame? We don't know this dame stuff. But it was really cool because they inject that a number of points in the game, too, where the story gets slightly altered by the kids talking to the grandfather. There was a part early in the game where you get to a village, and the village is under attack by monsters, and the grandfather's like, it's being attacked by, I'm not going to say the enemy type in general, but he'll just be like, it's under attack by vile fiends under the guise of, you know, the evil villain. And then the kids go, that's boring. You don't like that. Can't have been attacked by something better, like giant monsters. And then the grandpa's like, whatever. And then the game says, hey, what do you want the village to be under attack by? You get to choose who's attacking the village.
Oh, that's funny.
Attacking it. Yeah, I love that part a lot. And I'm hoping to come across a lot more moments like that, too. And the tutorial segments, like, you know, when the game says, press this button to jump, or your character can do X, Y, or Z. The story does that, too, because, like, the grandfather will narrate to you and say, Lily just realized that if she walks to the edge of the ledge, she can leap down for a shortcut. And it's like, it's kind of nice that it does everything in that childlike story element way. And funny thing about that, too, even though it's a whole children getting a story bit, don't let that confuse you into thinking that the game is easy, because it is not. Dungeons, don't get me wrong, it's not, like, grueling hard or anything, but I'm sure we've all played Zelda, and within the first two dungeons or so, everything's pretty cake, because it's like, hey, you have no dungeon items, and you don't want to make the game too challenging from a platformer perspective. But in this game, no, they hit you right off the bat with some pretty challenging, like, elements. Like, there's a part where you have to run through a corridor with sinking tiles while there are, like, spinning mace pile, like, poles, like, spinning around trying to knock you off. So you get, like, one go to get through the entire corridor, and if you fall off, they send you all the way back to the beginning of the corridor. And it's challenging, but fun challenging, too. So I was pretty much entranced. I was entranced by this game. Like, I when you suggested to me, I was like, yeah, I like Zelda-type games. I'll get into this. But I wasn't expecting it to be something that I really dug. It'd be more like, this is a game that it's serviceable, and I think you'll like it if you just want something.
You weren't expecting it to be this good.
Exactly that. And again, that's why I kind of like doing a lot of these game reviews, because I hear about games I don't typically even talk about or even consider. But then after playing, I'm like, I got to tell people about this game, because it's being ignored because it's not Breath of the Wild, or it's not X big game publisher title, you know? This game is legit, and I'd recommend it to anybody. It's good. Is there anything in particular about you kind of curious about, like maybe items or stuff like that?
Well, I figure it's basically, you know, I played a limited amount of it myself, and everything just felt like in the vein of Zelda.
Yeah, you get, like, the bow and the bombs, though. Yeah. I guess this is also kind of like Zelda nonetheless, but one thing that kind of surprised me is I'm guessing throughout the game you'll be able to upgrade your gear to different types of gear, because early on in the game you come across a blacksmith in the main town, and he goes, come back once you get your sword. So you come back once you get your sword, and he goes, okay, I can upgrade your gear, and he gives you, like, a shopping list of stuff you need to bring back to him. So I ended up doing that, expecting to get, you know, sword level 2, but instead he upgraded my bow to a tri-bow.
Hmm.
So it shoots 3 arrows instead of 1, and which immediately came to use in one of the underground puzzles to get an item unlocked, which I was surprised by. But, yeah, I was like, wait a minute, you're not giving me a sword? What the heck is this? A tri-bow? A blacksmith can make a tri-bow? This is odd, but whatever, I'll take it. You know, so it kind of threw me for a bit of a surprise. But it was a nice surprise. So I picture hopefully most of the sub gear will come with upgrades later on in the game.
Nice. So for $15?
It's gold. It's worth it. Pick it up. I actually wonder if it's going to get console releases sometime later, but especially if it doesn't, it's definitely worth it on the Steam right now.
Oh, God, I hope it does.
Yeah, it'd be great on, like, on a controller, or technically you can play on the controller there too, but you know what I mean. Just something about having it on console I just prefer. But
yeah,
and it deserves that push, because if it got onto a console, which is surprisingly a smaller release market than Steam, it'll get a greater push to be like, hey, this game's getting released this week, it'll get mentioned on Kotaku, it'll get mentioned on, like, the PlayStation drop page and Major Nelson's page.
It'll be mentioned on the SML podcast.
Yes, again, it'll come up all over. Oh, hush up, you. It's a good show. And yes, it'll come up on SNL again, because that'll give us an excuse to rediscuss it. So
indeed, that's my favorite thing, is when games that we enjoy hit a second platform, it gives us an excuse to talk about it again.
Oh, yeah. And hopefully with more experience, because now after a couple months, it's like, now it's time to play through it twice. Whatever.
And you mentioned the soundtrack. Fun part about the soundtrack is I'm actually going to be playing that on this episode.
Oh, so, seriously?
Yeah. Our music, we normally talk about the music later on, but since you brought it up, music this episode is going to be a medley song for our interview later in the show from Virtual Air Guitar for their game, Air Guitar Warrior. And the music at the end of the show is just going to be some stuff from this.
That's good to hear, because everyone needs to hear it. Them jams are slick.
Indeed. You'll have to send me some of your favorites, and I'll make sure to get those on.
Okay, I can do that.
But yeah, Blossom Tales, awesome stuff. But we're going to move on, because this is a project. We are about to review the Arcade Archives Neo Geo series. Eight games in the series that have released, developed and published by Hamster, based on titles originally developed by SNK. Again, we're going through the first eight games in the lineup, and I figure we'll just go in order of release.
Okay, sounds like a plan to me.
So, February 23rd, we had two games released. First up was Neo Turf Masters. Players can choose from a total of six golfers with different abilities and play on courses located around the world, such as Australia or Germany. Players can test out their golf game skills against friends with game modes such as Stroke Play and Match Play. What did you think of this one?
It's a weird way to put this, because, you know, golf games, there's not a ton that you can do with golf, first of all. I mean, it's golf. Yeah. And I feel like we've also been heavily spoiled by later releases, like from the Nintendo sports line that Camelot put out. But even with all those things in mind, coming into Neo Turf Masters expecting just to go hum into the night, I was surprised. I still enjoyed it. It still had that golf flair with the Neo Geo coat of paint. The SNK coat of paint. And honestly hit me well. Like, I played through the entire Grand Canyon course as well. Yeah, as like kind of peeking onto some of the other ones.
I was excited when this was one of the first two games to come out, because I was a fan of it in the arcades. I'm trying to think what the hell the name of the store was. I think Hills or Ames, one of those nearby my house, had a Neo Geo arcade machine, and this was one of the games on it. Honestly, don't remember what the hell the others were. I just remember playing golf. They also had an Outrun machine, which was fun. But, I think what people need to remember with all of the games we're about to discuss is that these are games from the 90s.
Yes.
Like, you are not going to find the modern trappings that you would expect in these kind of games.
That's for sure. And that was the first thing I had to come to understand, too, regarding, like, when I, again, booting up Neo Turf Masters was a good example of that, because I came into this with the intention of saying, okay, I'm used to having, like, you know, arrows on the grain, on the green now, telling me the exact slope. I'm used to, you know, very minute details on, like, how I can make my guy, like, move and stand. Yep. And, like, how I hit the ball. But even with some of those things not being here, it was still fun. In fact, for example, hitting on the green, without, even though it doesn't have all the green measurements and stuff like that, it's still easier to plan the green shots, because they still kind of give you a good power setting regardless of the slope. So it's like, even though there might be a hill there, the game's still like, hit it here, you're pretty likely to get it in. Like, whereas like later golf games, it would explain like, okay, you need this power level. This is how far you are away from the hole.
Yeah.
So you had to compensate for how much additional or less power you had to put in based on the slope. This game is just like, here it is, hit it there, and you're like 90% chance to get it, as long as you aim properly.
It's a lot more simplified than
stuff. Which is kind of good, because they also hit you with that arcade timer. So whereas, say, in Mario Golf, you can take all the time you want, and the only thing you had to worry about is your friend is yelling at you to hurry the heck up. This game, you get about 30 seconds to set up your shot and line it, and if you don't, it just kind of whiffs it on you.
Yeah.
So you got to run through it. No joking around for this game.
Yeah.
But a thing that I did laugh at really hard, I just want to mention this, the character selection is freaking gold. You have I thought the best one was the first, you know, the middle class character, which has all average stats. His name is Young Hero, because apparently there's a hero in Gulf. He's a young hero, but he has the wrinkles to be clearly 35 to 40, which says a lot for what they expect golfers to be as far as age level goes.
Yeah.
Young Hero is in his 30s. He's young, though. And then there was, like, Technician Golfer, who is clearly a guy who's, like, he's been, like, working on, like, freaking, like, some kind of engineering company for years, and he's got the glasses. They can push up on his face. It carries all the stereotypes. And then, like, the what I laughed at second hardest after Young Golfer was a Power Golfer, which was, a grizzled man who has one stat in everything except power, which is maxed out. So it's like there's no balance there. He's like, I'm really strong, but not very smart, and I have no control
for shit, but I'll hit it far.
Exactly. It's freaking gold. Like, I just love that clear impression where I was like, okay, in order to put this out, we just need to come up with some names for these characters in the States. I'm not sure. I didn't look at the Japanese options, so I didn't compare the two.
No.
But it just seemed funny. It was like, Young Hero. Because that's what you want to see in an arcade game, regardless of what you're actually playing.
Yeah. The next game that released that, I figure we're going to go over brief thoughts of the games first and then do, like, bulk ratings at the end, because I do have some thoughts on the series as a whole.
Okay.
So I figure we'll just do quick discussions of each of the games. But next up, also released on February 23rd, was World Heroes. 8 characters based on historical celebrities such as Hattori Hanzo and Rasputin will fight each other to become the world's strongest champion. In addition to normal mode, a deathmatch mode featuring various stages full of traps awaits you for merciless battles. I think this was the best of the, I think, 4 fighting games available right now.
On my block, I had 2 of them, and of the 2 I had, I would definitely agree with you that World Heroes was the better one to play.
Yeah, because they had World Heroes, King of Fighters 94, Fatal Fury, and Art of Fighting, and while like a game like Fatal Fury and Art of Fighting may have more recognizable names and King of Fighters, I just think that they were way too fucking hard.
They really were. Like, they definitely kept the arcade hard in all of these. But to the top of the fighter side of things, it didn't necessarily help it. Which is, again, not a bad thing. I'm sure, like, people who are, like, really obsessed with fighting games or were, like, really big in the fighting games back then, they are, like, ready for that kind of thing. But yeah, if you're a casual player who just wants to revisit the days of old, yeah, be ready for what you're going to get into.
I figure we'll get into the difficulty more with some of the later games, but I think World Heroes was easily the most accessible of the fighting games here. I mean, there's not too much to talk about. You know, it's arcade even fighting game.
Even the special moves, like, when I was playing World Heroes, I got to a moment where I was like, I was using Jan, which, by the way, is it just me? She's totally supposed to be Joan of Arc, right?
Probably.
That's what I was assuming. It's like, there's no way she's not Joan of Arc. But anyway, I was using her, and I got to this, I was like, I want to see what the special moves are for these characters. So even though I did 2 things, one, I believe you could go to the manual and it did the typical, you know, here are the base set of moves that the character would have, but we might not tell you all of them.
Yeah.
And then I went to an FAQ for Classic World Heroes, and sure enough, she really did only have about 3 to 4 different specials, which is unique for that day of those days, you know. Well, not for those days, but compared to the present day where everybody had like 10 moves or a ton of things you can do, this game is like very small roster of moves. And there's not inputs for doing the moves. Are not very complicated. So it's just like hold back and then forward and press the button, or hold down and then up and press the button. Yes. So not
early days of fighting arcade games.
Mm-hmm. Which makes it kind of good. And the other component that I thought would make World Heroes stand out more is the fact that, like you said, the other games, Art of Fighting and King of Fighters, they've all had later revisions up until the present, even, because as you know, a lot of the Art of Fighting characters got, you know, brought into the later series, the King of Fighters series, off and on. So yeah, they've had reappearances, whereas World Heroes, aside from World Heroes 2, I don't think they've had another reappearance since this game in World Heroes 2.
No, that's what you get with the historical references instead of original characters. You don't get as much, I guess, creative liberty to create your own characters that way.
Yeah, I think you're very much right about that. But, you know, when you think about it, it's like that makes those games more viable. It's like, hey, yeah. I haven't gotten a chance to play see these guys in action in ages. But what about you? What was your take on it?
Like I said, I thought it was enjoyable. I thought it was the most accessible of the fighting games.
Oh, yeah.
And that's going to win points when we get to our reviews later. But the next week, I thought, had the best lineup so far of the weeks they've been doing these. Released on March 2nd, first up was NAMM 1975. It was one of the first ever games released on Neo Geo. Players will take the role of U.S. Special Forces soldiers braving a harsh battlefield as they try to survive a series of deadly firefights. Players will need to use collectible power-ups and other abilities, such as their evasive role, to complete their mission. What'd you think of this one?
Hard as balls. Hard as balls that have cement in them, I guess I should say, because balls aren't very hard. But it was also strangely fun. Like, at first, I was getting really frustrated because I was getting the crap hammered out of me on the very first stage. But then I didn't realize until later that the C button doubles as a dodge roll and a sprint.
Yeah.
So you can actually cover better terrain than I was actually doing, which was what was getting me killed. The weapon selection is awesome in the game. I like the idea of the shooting gallery style gameplay, which is actually surprisingly rare outside of actual shooters. Like, you know what I mean? Like the actual gun peripheral.
Yeah.
So that was a lot of fun. And there was also a surprise bit of humor there. Not a ton of it, mind you, because it was meant to be kind of serious for the kind of game it was. But I did kind of laugh at the fact where it was like a woman being held hostage by a gunman. And you could, unfortunately, kill her if you weren't a good shot, but I did not kill her. So she says, thank you. And then thinking she's going to just give you some points and run away. No, she comes up with you, and she comes up to your guy with in a dress and starts spraying gunfire alongside your Marine, which I thought was hysterical. Like, this woman isn't messing around. They must have really pissed her off. She's going,
she hangs out with you until you die.
Yeah, it's freaking cool. And there's a lot of cool equipment items you can get. Like, you can get the grenades, which are explosives, which are mainly good for, like, mass coverage and for attacking the vehicles that'll come at you. And also, I came across, like, a flamethrower and a dual reticle, which was pretty nice to use.
Yeah, but that was a good one.
Yes, it was. And I think it stuck around even after you died. It was there until you continued. But even with all those bonuses, this game is no laughing matter. It is not easy. The enemies come at you strong and fast. The very first boss is two dudes who have like a flamethrower and grenades and a machine gun. And they come at you together in a way that can get you trapped in the corner more times than I've counted.
Yeah.
It was so fun game.
The thing I liked about this game was, unlike some of the fighting games, when you're playing just like the casual mode, because the games have a handful of different modes. When you're just playing like either the English or Japanese version of the game, you can go in and adjust the arcade settings. Like, you could change the number of lives you have. You could change, you know, how long it takes you to get extra lives. You can adjust the difficulty of the games. And this was one where, you know, because I want to get through the games and enjoy them. This was one of the games that I would just throw on like the one difficulty, give myself a bunch of lives, and just play through the whole thing.
Yeah, I could definitely dig that. And that's good more so for like points and stuff. But on a positive other note, like, even if you want to embrace the difficulty of the game but want to play through it, due to the fact that these are arcade games, they allow you to just pump quarters in like a bandit.
Yeah.
Just stream through it anyway. So, like, you can set your own – and it ties into what you were saying, actually. It lets you set your own challenge. Like, do you want to – see how hard you can go with the highest difficulty before having to pop a quarter and then just kind of pace yourself out? Or do you want to go with high scores and set the difficulty at its lowest setting and see how high you can get your score to before the end of the game? It's just, there's a lot of variety and options for you to play this game thanks to the dip switch.
Yeah, I love the dip switch options.
I do.
And then the other game that released that week, which unfortunately you didn't get to try this one, I gave our code for this one to CJ, who isn't with us right now, because I bought the game originally and had some weird issues with it that I'll get into, but unfortunately that meant you couldn't try it. So you don't have anything to say about Metal Slug. players control Marco and Tarma, who belong to the special forces team known as the Peregrine Falcon Squad. They fight to defeat General Donald Morden in an effort to take back their stolen weapon known as the Metal Slug. Players can utilize various weapons and vehicles such as the Metal Slug to sway the fight in their favor. I don't think you need to play this, though, to know what the hell Metal Slug is.
Oh, yeah. I've never played this version of it that's been released on the ACA collection, but I've played Metal Slug in various forms, be it the Neo Geo or PlayStation or Neo Geo Pocket Color. Yeah.
I mean, it's been around. It's the original arcade Metal Slug, 2D platformer shooter. And you know, if you don't know what the hell Metal Slug is, I feel bad for you.
I concur. I will say one thing. I wondered if you agree with this since you played this version of it, but I'm going to wager that playing it on a controller is leaps and bounds easier than an arcade stick due to how you have to mash the gun button to shoot bullets.
Oh God. Yeah. Whew. Oh Lord. Yeah. And, it seemed to make aiming with the tank a little bit easier as well, since, you know, you have the finer control of an analog stick instead of the big ass arcade knob.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
That you had to mess with. I mentioned having a weird issue with this. This so far, I have to chalk this up to my old console being the cause of the issue. But when I played this originally, I routinely had constant stuttering with the gameplay, like to the point where I was getting like 5 frames a second.
Yeah, and I saw you sent me a clip of that issue, and it was stuttering so badly that for a second I thought the problem was that your guy was somehow fusing with one of the hostages and creating like a new sprite.
Yeah, I haven't seen anybody else who had the issue. I haven't been able to replicate it on my new system. CJ, who is also a member of the preview program, because we thought it might be preview related, he got the code for that game and he didn't have any issues with it. So if anyone out there is having a problem with Metal Slug or any of the other games having absolute god awful frame rates, it might be your system.
Well, at least you were able to fix this. At least you were able to replace the system, because that could have been other problems for other games down the line too. Yeah,
I have no idea what the issue was. I know the ACA series as a whole has one issue that we'll get to in a bit that can contribute to some frame stutters, but not to the extent that I had. So, but even still, it's fucking Metal Slug. I still played through it, and I still got nearly all the achievements in the game with that issue because it's Metal Slug. Yes. Anyway, the week after, March 9th, we saw the King of Fighters 94. The original characters of the King of Fighters 94 and popular characters from series such as Fatal Fury and Ikari Warriors come together to battle out in a no-holds-barred 3-on-3 team battles. This original entry in the King of Fighters series introduced intricate special move systems which have since become a staple of the fighting game genre, including desperation moves which could turn the tide of a battle in an instant. I gotta be honest, I didn't like this game. I thought it was way too friggin' difficult. This was one of the games we mentioned with World Heroes of some of the fighters just being absurdly difficult. And this was one of the games that even when I would go to the easiest arcade settings, I still couldn't get past the second fight.
Yeah, same here with me. Like, though, part of it was a combination of the game being just difficult and me having a slight disinterest in it. And I'll tell you what, it's because I'm not good at fighters, mind you. So when it got to the point where it was later King of Fighters games, they have the 3-on-3 style, but you can choose your characters of your own accord, so you can decide who you want to fight with.
Yeah, where this one had pre-made, 3-person teams. You pick a country, and then you get 3 set fighters.
Yeah, which made me sad, because it was always a group of a country where the group would be like, okay, I'm good with one guy, or good with two guys, but I suck with the last guy. So I'm ultimately putting myself in a position where I'm getting my butt handed to me over and over again on a difficult game with characters I don't want to use.
Yeah.
So I would say this is good as a, so how do you feel about the historical context of King of Fighters fighting games? But not so much on the playing King of Fighters, because there's tons of versions that came after this.
Yeah.
Some of which have the same classic style of sprites and gameplay mechanics, but they give you more options.
And actually, the newest one to come out on Xbox One is King of Fighters 95, which we haven't gotten yet. Which I'm hoping we will, to so we could compare it. But as of now, I haven't tried 95 yet.
Yeah, hopefully it was as soon as 95 that they gave you the improvements that I was talking about. But yeah, with 94, not so feeling it.
Honestly, for me, the less we talk about this one, the better. I think King of Fighters 94 was the first one, because I bought the first six releases of these on my own because I wasn't sure if we would get in touch with Hamster or not. This was the first one where I was like, yeah, I wish I didn't spend that $8.
Yep, and sounds about right, especially when you're like, it's a meager $8. You're still like, I could have had that $8. That's a Big Mac. That's a combo meal, man.
That's four songs in Rock Band.
Exactly. Like, the heck with this. So unfortunately, that one didn't quite make the cut of Joy Time.
The following week, though, was Sengoku, released March 16th. Players will fight against past ghosts that have been revived to the present age in a devastated Washington city. Players can use special characters who are confined after releasing them, fighting by switching to armor-clad wolf, samurai, or ninja, according to the situation, will be your key to success. You did get to cover this one. What did you think of this one?
I thought it was hysterical and very strange, but also fun. So I'm glad you made that description of the game, because now I know that you only get those four guys. I was wondering if a later stage would give you a new person to use, because unlike a lot of arcade games where they give you all of your abilities to start, with the exception of, you know, the occasional pickup, on the first stage of the game, you find all of those souls and you start using them as soon as you earn them in combat. Yeah. But I thought it was kind of strange how you would be running through one area to start, and then out of nowhere, you're just like zapped up under the sky, and now you're fighting in the clouds with no explanation. You're just there.
It's a very odd game, but I thought it was really fun. It's 2D-ish brawler, very much in the vein of like Final Fight.
Oh, yeah. It was a lot of fun to play. And like literally the only real gripe that I had about the game, and maybe it was just how I played it and I wasn't familiar with the mechanics, is two things, I guess, more so. One, as we probably didn't mention, you can switch between character forms as you play the game. So like one minute you're like the hard brawling guy from the streets, and you're like, now it's like, oh, I want to be the samurai for a few minutes. So you can press a button and then scroll through your personas and then change into one. But unfortunately, the game doesn't stop while you are transforming. So if you're transforming into a situation, the guy can get some cheap shots on you while the transformation is taking place, which kind of annoyed me.
The beauty of classic arcade games.
Yeah, they want that money.
Money, 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 money.
I almost wonder if one of the achievements is beat the entire game on one credit, which would just be cruel and unusual punishment.
That's one of the other things that we'll get to after we talk about everything, is the achievements in the game are like copy paste.
Oh, but so like in this game, it's like the other thing about it is, like, I'm not sure if certain personas are better against certain enemies, but like I know some of like the guys, you kind of hit them, and as you're trying to, your hits just whiff right through them.
I hated using the wolf, because I couldn't hit shit with the wolf.
The wolf was abysmal. He was terrible. And the ninja guy was cool, but he had a double-edged plus and minus in the fact that his movement was him flipping, not walking. So I had a hard time placing him to do attacks.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I liked the game.
Nice. And then the final two games that we have to talk about, or at least that I have to talk about since you didn't get these two, Fatal Fury, which released March 23rd. Players take part in brutal street fights in a variety of locations, with the goal of toppling the infamous crime lord Geese Howard. Game includes very unique features when compared to other fighting games available at the time, including a special line battle system that allows players to traverse between the foreground and background, and two-player co-op functionality. I don't have friends, so I didn't get to try the co-op, but this is another one of the fighting games where it's just, it could be brutally difficult. On the easiest settings, for the most part, it was doable. except for Geese Howard at the end. I was playing on one difficulty. I got to Geese Howard. I continued the game 17 times.
Holy cow. Now that's arcade hard. It is original core there.
And I couldn't win a round on Geese
Howard. So even on your 17th continue, that was you more so giving up than finally succeeding at it?
Yeah, because it's not a brawler. It's just like a one-on-one fighting game.
Now, what was the difficulty you had? Was it on the default setting, or did you bring it down?
That was on difficulty one, the easiest difficulty.
Holy cow.
I couldn't win a fucking round on Geese Howard.
They just were like, they didn't want anybody to get freebie wins in that game.
It was straight up cheating at the point. Like, you would jump in with an attack. When he would do an attack, and he would like cancel out of his attack to punch you.
They didn't have
that shit at the time. They didn't have action cancels in the fucking mid 90s.
But clearly the computer did, because he was all about getting milking for those coins.
And then Geese Howard, he had like, you know, you could just do a standard attack on him and he would just counter it and throw you. There were rounds where I was hit with three attacks and I lost. Three.
Yeah, they can keep that nonsense. Yeah, once you get to that level of difficulty, I don't even want to re-experience that. We got away from that for a reason.
Yeah.
And it's because they didn't have a reason to milk you for quarters anymore.
Classic arcade quarter munchers. And then the final game was Art of Fighting. Ryo Sakazaki and Robert Garcia fight against numerous enemies to free Yuri Sakazaki, who is kidnapped by a mysterious person. The game is known as an ambitious title via the introduction of Spirit Gauge and representation on characters of the damage received by the enemy. I have no clue what the fuck that means. That's not a very well-written description.
It's madness. It's madness is what it is.
This is another one-on-one fighting game. The big draw with this one is the character models and the sprites in these are incredibly large and detailed. So it is a beautiful game, but it's just, this is another brutally unfair game. Even on the easiest difficulty, I couldn't make it past the second fight.
So I want to ask, but this might be a definitely thing that's worth bringing up. You mentioned the beautiful sprites and stuff. So would you say that in the present day, playing classic games and new age games and present day games, that those the beauty of those sprites held up today when you played it?
In many of them, yes. In Art of Fighting, the game still looks great today.
That's what's up. That's what I like to hear, too, because I felt the same way about the King of Fighters. Even though I wasn't big on the gameplay itself, the sprites still look awesome.
I mean, you can't go wrong with 16-bit sprites. They just look good. 16, 32, whatever Neo Geo was, I'm guessing 32. I know they were more advanced than 16 at the time. But
I think they were 32.
They're just quality. 2D sprites don't age.
No, they don't. And it was a beautiful thing to revisit all that stuff. Even going back to the old golfing game where you had freaking the young hero giving the thumbs up when he gets his teeth. Like, that looks pretty cool.
But this is the point where I want to address some of the overall, the unifying things of the series. I know a lot of people have been shitting on these ACA releases. They're like, I got to pay $8 for a 20, 30-year-old game. Bitch, do you know how much these were back then?
$300, $200 releases.
That's not a joke, people. If you weren't around for the Neo Geo days, single games to own were legitimately $200+ because you were buying an arcade game for the most part.
It was insane. And like now I go to like certain collector's houses and they collected those games and they're like sitting on like tons of them. I'll ask them how much they're paying for the present day ones, and yeah, they're not paying $200-$300, but they're still paying surprisingly collector prices for these carts.
I mean, they were never cheap. They still aren't, and the fact that they were so expensive, there weren't many of them made for some of the games.
That's correct. So the fact that you can get access to them now is a beautiful thing.
And even still, the $8 is cheaper than what they were on the Wii. The Wii Virtual Console, they were $9, so they're $1 cheaper through this series.
And you get achievements on here, and I hadn't played them on the Wii, but I'm going to wager that the Wii didn't have a lot of the dip switch settings either. It's probably just, here's a flat game, you can play it.
I would imagine, I honestly, I never played them on the Wii either, but So it's possible that they had those options, but even still, the $8 price tag for these games is not unreasonable, in my opinion. I'm sure people out there are going to disagree, and hey, whatever. There are some gripes I have with the series as a whole, though. No matter what game it is, if you pop an achievement, your game is going to get all laggy and sluggish.
Ugh. Yeah, and I noticed a little bit of that on some games, but I think it mainly depended on the game I was playing. Like, if it was a game where the achievement kicked in, say, at the end of a round or when you were going to continue, you probably didn't notice it because you were already dead.
But when you're in the middle of a game like Metal Slug and an achievement pops while you're in a firefight, you're going to notice it. The frame rate is going to drop down to, like, single digits for a couple of seconds while the achievement pops. I don't understand it. It has happened on every single game. I don't know if it's an issue with their emulator running on the system with, like, system-wide commands such as achievements popping. I don't know what it is. But thankfully the games only have like 12 achievements, so it's not going to happen often. And that's another gripe, is that all the achievements in the game are basically identical.
Yeah. Well, that sucks too. But at the same time, I guess it helps for achievement hunters to plan things, you know?
True. I know a number of the games have, like, World Heroes. People have been able to get 1,000 out of 1,000 in that in like 20 minutes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, I mean, as I said, like, I feel like with the achievements on that, thankfully, you know, that's pretty much how I would do it. I would just pretty much, like, plan my way out and just kind of, like, I saw the 50,000 points and 100,000 points.
Yep.
It was like, just knock them out, and just go between the games. So I nailed a couple of achievements just by doing that.
Yeah. Every game has 3-point achievements, like, hit this many, and this many. In each of the 3 different modes, either in the standard mode where you could use the dip switches, they have a caravan mode, which is basically you got 5 minutes to go as far as you can.
Oh, that's not bad.
And then they have a high score mode, which is you have 1 credit to get as far as you can.
See, I'm all right with that then. That gives me, as more to what we were talking about earlier, about having variety of options to play the game.
Yeah, that's what I enjoy about the games, is they do have those different options and each have their unique leaderboards. The problem with some of those is, especially in terms of the fighting games, is those games are on default difficulty, which means when they're hard as hell on the easiest difficulty, they are like, fuck you difficult on default. Because that's another...
It's arcades. Yeah. It's arcades.
That's another downfall of some of these releases, is that they are based on arcade games where they are designed to eat your money.
So, I mean, but ultimately, I think it's balanced out by the fact that you can put in as many credits as you want. So you're getting arcade perfect recreations, including the brutal difficulty. So as we are stepping to an era where a lot of people don't even have access to arcades to even see that anymore.
Yeah.
It's kind of nice to be able to just boot up and go, so this is what they used to deal with back in the day when they had to ask mom for $5. And this is as far as they can get. They're all panhandling in front of the store to get extra money, because where else are you going to get it? Your parents are already broke. Yeah. What else are you going to do?
I mean, you have the credits in the standard modes, but in the high score in the caravan mode, it's only 1 shot. So those achievements, like, achievement whores are going to hate some of these games. Like, any of the fighting games, if you're an achievement whore, you should stay away, except for World Heroes.
Because you will suffer.
Yeah. I mean, I think, as a whole, I love the series. I love what they're doing. Some of the games might not be the best, and we're going to give our verdicts on those in a bit. But I think for $8 a pop, if you're a fan of retro gaming, the series as a whole is something that you should be looking into.
I concur. Review. Check out each one as they release it, and then... Go with your gut on them, or go with the SML podcast review concept.
So let's start at the top. Neo Turf Masters, $8. What are your thoughts?
I'd say if you're interested in a classic golf game, you're like games like Golden Tee, but you want that classic SNK touch, I'd say it's a buy.
I agree, although the difficulty might steer some of the newer gamers away, because some of those later holes can be difficult. Because, again, quarter munching.
Yeah, but that's golf in general, though, too. I mean, you're going to get hard courses. That's true. Just natural.
World Heroes, what are your thoughts?
Only if you're a fighting game enthusiast who wants to revisit this concept in a world where, like, you know, you probably won't be able to see it in a future sequel, I'd give it at least a check it out.
I give this one a hearty try it just because it is the most accessible of the fighting games here. And achievement hunters, this should be an automatic buy it because it is super easy to get the 1,000.
I dig that.
Metal Slug, you didn't play it, but you could still give it a verdict if you want.
I would say if you can't if you can't access Metal Slug through any of the collections that have existed out there, you want to play on a modern system, it's a definite buy.
I agree. This is, in my opinion, the best of the bunch released on Xbox One and an absolute buy to my eyes for $8. NAMM 1975, thoughts?
Buy. It was a lot of fun. The lady in the dress that can help you shoot out enemies was hysterical. It's challenging, but not stupid challenging. And the style of gameplay is one that's not very common in today's game releases. So
especially the controls. It's a very unique control scheme. And I think once you get the hang of the controls in the game, it's definitely worth the $8.
I concur. It's definitely worth the purchase.
King of Fighters 94.
I'd pass.
Agreed. I think this might be my least favorite of the 8 that have been out so far.
And even for people who are listening to this and going, come on, dude, it's King of Fighters. You would also be aware of the fact that King of Fighters has had multiple releases after this game that retain the sprite quality and gameplay styles, but with better improvements and making it more worth your money to buy those than this.
I mean, if you are a hardcore fighting fan and you can handle unfair difficulty in a fighting game, give it a try. But honestly, this, deny it.
I concur.
Sengoku, $8. Thoughts?
I'd say it's worth at least a try. It's a fun beat 'em up. The change mechanic is rare for fighting games, but some of the issues I had regarding like whiffing on enemies and just not quite grasping if there's a certain character comments you're supposed to have, like character matchups, I would ignore it in that regard. But otherwise, I'd give it a shot at least because they might not have the same problem I have. What about you?
I give it a hearty try. I think it was definitely one of the more fun ones, bordering on a buy, actually. I thought it was a lot of fun. Some of the music in the game kind of like weirded me out, as weird as that sounds. But overall, I thought it was really cool stuff. And
no, I agree with you on the music. When you go up to the sky levels, the music got strange. Ooh, da, 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 da.
Yeah, like that. What that fucking like freaked me out.
It does.
And then the last two, Fatal Fury and Art of Fighting. I don't think you really have an opinion on these since you didn't get to try them. Fatal Fury. It's like a hesitant try it because it was entertaining, but again, Geese Howard is just unfair, like cheating unfair.
Yeah, and when you get to that level of it, it's like no one really truly needs to experience that to smile. It's like I'd just be glad that we can regale you with stories of games weren't fair back then. Suck it up and cry and just save your money.
And then Art of Fighting, as beautiful as the game is and as much as I want to enjoy it, I think I have to give this one just an outright deny it because the difficulty. When I put a game on the easiest difficulty, I should be able to get past the second fight.
Mm-hmm. I concur.
Like, I shouldn't be struggling with, like, just brutally unfair difficulty. And I can understand that's a byproduct of that era of arcade games, but that doesn't mean that it works these days.
I concur with that as well. It's just, if you can't, I mean, the reason the difficulty so much is there is it's supposed to give you an option to actually be able to experience the entire game, even if you're not necessarily good enough to get there through natural means.
Yeah.
So, definite pass on that too. Even though I haven't played it, that would be my speculative thought.
But yeah, overall, I think the series as a whole is definitely worth picking them up. If it's not a fighting game, I think it's definitely worth checking the game out at the very least. Fighting games, you might want to be a bit hesitant just because of the difficulty. I know SNK is known for their fighting games, but the brutal, unfair difficulty of many of the games, you're going to have to think twice about some of them.
I mean, not to shoot down SNK also, but let's be honest here. There's so many fighting games they've done with future revisions and things of that nature that to blow your money on every single fighting game that comes out, you're not going to play them all. you're going to play certain ones, you're going to ignore others, and it's going to be like a relic in your collection to say, I own it, but I'll never use it.
Very true.
It's not exactly knocking on them to say, you might not want to buy this title.
Very true. Well, Purnell, thank you for doing these with me. It has been awesome having you on and doing this massive joint review. Do you have any final words on the ACA series?
SNK forever, about the gist of it.
All right, we're back. You missed Purnell dropping by. Are you sad?
Yeah, a little bit. I do enjoy hearing his reviews because he's insane.
And it was long. I spent a lot of time with him and Wood.
I missed that too.
Yeah, so. But at least you were here for Chris.
Yeah, I was here for the worst of the. It's okay, Chris.
On the plus side, Purnell should be on our next episode, and you'll get to see him then.
Yeah, that'll be fun. Plus, without like a full just game to focus on, it should be insane.
True. We do have one final review that I got to take care of quick. This one is called New Frontier Days, Founding Pioneers, developed and published by Arc System Works. It released March 23rd on the Nintendo Switch for $9.99, same day as Othello. New Frontier Days, Founding Pioneers is a build-from-scratch frontier town building simulation game where you command your pioneers to colonize a new land, command them accordingly, and build your town efficiently. What kind of towns will you build in the frontier lands? I really didn't enjoy this one. This is very... It feels like a mobile game ported to the Switch, except it's not a mobile game.
That doesn't make sense. Explain. Yeah.
It is. It's one of those frontier, like, town-building simulators where you start off... You know, you have to build a farm, and then you have to mine resources by, like, rocks and trees and hunt for food, go fishing. There's a lot of different things you can do in the game, and, you know, you can control either with the controls, or you could use the touchscreen if you're playing it that way. So much of the touchscreen stuff feels like it's all tap-based, like, touch here, then touch here, where I wish I could have just, like, drug icons or... You know, slid my foot, like, here, grab this and slide it onto here. But no, you have to tap here, then tap there again to confirm it. And then if you want a character to leave, you got to tap on it and then tap to the exit and then tap it again to confirm it. It just felt very convoluted to do anything in the game. It also seemed to throw, like, a lot of things at you in the tutorial section, not spend enough time on any of them, and then still not tell you enough.
Huh, that's like the, shame.
Like, there's constantly new missions popping up, like cut down X number of trees, or catch X number of fish, or whatever else. But it never explains to you, it never explained that, like, those are timed, so you have to accomplish them in a certain amount of time once you accept them. Like, I didn't even know I was accepting missions when I was tapping on them. They were just, like, out of nowhere. The one was just like, you failed this. I'm like, what the fuck did I didn't do anything. Oh, well, I guess I had a mission that I didn't do, and I failed it. And given that it starts you with only, like, two people, it's expecting you to get a lot more done than you're able to.
Yeah, that's weird.
One of the missions was to, like, hunt boar, so I sent one of my guys to hunt boar. You know, I put my attention on someone else who was, like, mining rocks, and someone else who was cutting down trees. And then I went to look for the guy who was hunting boar, and he was just gone. I'm like, what the fuck? Where did he go? And it wasn't until later that I assigned another guy to hunt boar that I saw that the boar can kill you.
Interesting.
I got no warnings about it. It's like, hey, this could be dangerous. I never got any notifications that, like, hey, one of your guys died. He was just gone out of nowhere.
That's pretty strange.
Just overall, it's not a very well-structured game. It seems like there's plenty in it to do, but it doesn't feel like there's a reason to do it. Like, I had no drive to continue playing this game. It feels like it was, like, a pay-to-win mobile game. But it wasn't. It was, you know, it was created for the Switch, So there's no pay to win elements. There's no microtransactions to it. It's just pay the $10 and it's there. But it still feels like there's pay to win elements.
That's interesting. That doesn't seem like something that just seems like a weird feeling to have about a game.
Like I don't know. Mobile ports are one thing, but when it's a new game that just feels like a mobile port, I don't know.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like something that would be appealing. Like, even with a game console, like the Switch, which is very, very mobile for a console, it just... I don't know if a mobile game structure would fit it.
I don't know. It just... It's not a very entertaining or fun game to play, which I think is the biggest detriment. I just had no reason or no desire to keep playing it. Between the two Arc System works, I think Othello was definitely the one that was worth picking up. Because it is what it is. It's Othello.
Yeah.
And it was $5. If this one was $5, maybe it'd be an easier one to pick up. But as it stands, I can't recommend this one. I got to give it a deny it. It's just not enjoyable. It's not entertaining. It feels like a bad mobile port when it's not a mobile game to begin with. It doesn't give you enough information while still wasting too much of your time. I don't know. I hate giving games deny it, but
it seems like there's been a lot more lately too.
I don't know. This one just, you know, we've covered a lot of Arc System Works games on the show too. Especially Wood, since a lot of their stuff is fighting, but this one, you know, props to them for trying something new and different, but it just didn't work for me. But anyway, that is it for now. We are going to check out a quick preview of a medley from the game Air Guitar Warrior, which Virtual Air Guitar hooked us up with, and then we're going to get into our chat with Aki of Virtual Air Guitar, and then later on in the show, as I mentioned to Purnell, we're going to play some music from Blossom Tales.
Seems like a missed opportunity to play, not play music from Air Guitar Warrior.
Well,
a game about music.
We only got the one song from it, so we're going to play that before the interview.
Okay, makes sense.
I just said we were going to play the medley.
Yeah.
But we only got the one song, so we're going to play the one, and then at the end, we're going to play other stuff, because Blossom Tales has an awesome soundtrack, too.
Oh,
but awesome. If you were here for that review, you would have known that.
Well, you know, sometimes I gotta sleep. Tired.
Bitch. Anyway, you got any final words to end this?
Yeah. All you people out there should email us and have us read something on the show. I think that would be fun. The SML podcast at gmail.com. Don't forget the V in the SML podcast at gmail.com.
That would be fun. I miss emails.
Yeah, it used to be. I remember you guys used to read them more often.
Yeah, we used to get them from Zach and Randall, but they don't love us anymore.
Face your destiny and become the legendary Air Guitar Warrior.
All right, welcome back, everyone. My guest at this time is joining us for the second time, a return guest to the show, Aki Kanerva of Virtual Air Guitar Company. Aki, how are you doing today?
Hi, Joe. I am doing just fine, thank you.
Welcome back to the show. What made you want to come back?
Well, it's obviously your catchy personality.
Flattery gets you everywhere, sir.
Indeed.
So you are just putting out a brand new game for the Xbox One Kinect. Shockingly, your first ever air guitar game, given your company name is Virtual Air Guitar Company.
I know, right? It's like it's about time we did something with air guitars in it. I mean, it's taken us 11 years and 11 games, but finally, we have an air guitar game out. I am so very happy and proud.
So tell us, what is the game? Tell us about the game. Give us the sales pitch.
All right. The game is called Air Guitar Warrior. And it's part music game, and it's part scrolling shooter, and it's totally full of rock attitude. The idea is that you are an air guitar warrior who wields the power of air guitar. Your guitars double as weapons. They can shoot fire and lightning. And you ride your epic mounts, including dinosaurs and tigers and mechanical dinosaurs and stuff. You race across environments such as post-apocalyptic city ruins and the pits of hell, exotic bamboo forests, and even the Temple of the Rock Gods on your quest to become the legend and to earn the legend. It's a guitar sword. It's called the legend.
There's a bunch of guitars in the game as well.
Yeah, so going down to the game mechanics, each air guitar is a weapon that shoots different kinds of bullets. So we've got your basic fire guitar that shoots like it's like a machine gun and a shotgun all together. We've got an ice guitar, a slime guitar, a thunder axe, and a laser guitar, just to name a few examples. And each of these guitars is has a different way of dispatching the various enemies which you will face, like exploding skulls and aliens and Vikings.
Something that I really love about the game is just the distinctly 80s feel to everything. Between the visuals, the neon in the game, it just feels like something ripped out of the 80s, and I love it.
Thanks. That's a nice compliment. One of the guiding design principles with us for this game was how to make awesome more awesome. We just, you know, kept stacking awesome stuff on top of each other until it was just bursting at the seams. I mean, we have two wonderful worlds to draw inspiration from. We have the entire history of hard rock and heavy metal, which is amazing in and of itself. But we also have the entire history of video games. And we're kind of blending both of them into one epic mishmash of rock attitude and 80s epicness. There's just no other word for it. It's just completely filled with epic.
And it's awesome. It's really enjoyable, a really fun time. Again, just the hand-drawn visuals, everything just looks awesome in the game.
Thanks. We were really lucky to find a really great artist for the game. All of the graphics are made by him. He's actually a student at the moment.
Wow, all done by a student. And what is his name? Who is the guy who created all this awesomeness?
He goes by the name of Toad-like.
Toad-like. Interesting.
Yes.
That is a good name.
It is, isn't it? I mean, it sticks to the mind.
Oh, man. So explain the actual style of gameplay in the game. How are you playing? Because you guys have done all Kinect games, and there's always a way to get your body involved in this. How are we going to be personally rocking out in this game?
Okay. So if you're familiar with Kung Fu for Kinect, the idea is that it's the same. Kinect is used to scan your image and placed directly into the game. So when there's a dinosaur in the game, it doesn't have an avatar standing on top of it. It's you as yourself. And you are given an air guitar, which is attached to your body. And you're actually creating, you're making air guitar-like movements and poses. You have, when you're strumming with your right hand, Kinect picks up those strumming motions, and the weapon fires bullets every time you strum. You aim the weapon by tilting the guitar's neck. You do that by moving your left hand up and down. And finally, you have four different playing styles, which are called... you can change between slow and fast playing, depending on how quickly you're strumming with your right hand. And you can play lead or rhythm based on whether your hand is where your left hand is along the imaginary guitar's neck. And each of these playing styles corresponds to a different type of bullet in the weapon. So, for example, you have slow rhythm, where you're extending your left hand and making strumming motions slowly on beat. And this is usually a very strong kind of bullet that has a great spread and a lot of power. But since it's slow, you have to have a good timing with it. And at the other end, you have a fast lead, where you're strumming very quickly, like your life depended on it, because it does. And it's very weak, but it allows you to fill the screen with little bullets, which is great for when your enemies are spread out.
It's such a unique concept of actually playing air guitar and strum, because one of the important things I've noticed in the game is you have to be on rhythm with the song. You can't just wildly strum and shoot. It mixes shooter with rhythm game, and if you're not on rhythm, it's just going to be like pee, and like shoot one tiny shitty little bullet that doesn't do much.
Yeah, you know, we actually didn't start out with the game. We started with the music. Because the whole idea of the player being able to actually influence the music, to control the lead guitar, that was born way back in 2005.
Wow, and so this has really been in the works for history.
It has indeed. The virtual air guitar game, which was never released, was going to have two play modes. One was, a Guitar Hero, like playing the guitar classics, following the notes of a real song. But the other gameplay was going to be called Freestyle, which would not be based on actual songs, but would let the player control the music. And the control mechanism of choosing the playing speed and the pitch, that was prototyped all the way back in 2005 with that air guitar game.
Wow.
Now, sadly, we were never able to return to the game because, you know, licensing music from Led Zeppelin and Metallica, that's just out of our league completely. But it was such a great idea that we wanted to come back to it somehow, in some possible manner. So, come 2016, we dug it up once more and figured out how could we really get at least something out of this. Yeah. And we started thinking, yeah, the freestyle mode is fun. It doesn't quite stand out on its own. But what if we added a game to it? What if we gave the player motivation to play? And The first prototype was just a guy, a flaming guitar, and a dinosaur. And everyone we showed it to was like, you have to make this game. It's amazing.
All good games start with someone riding a dinosaur with a flaming guitar. That's just
if
a
they
fact.
Don't, they choose. Yeah. And yeah, I think that the initial prototype showed that it's not just the music, it's not just the game, it's not just the attitude and the style. It's when you combine those three, that's magical.
It's the whole experience. Like, it wouldn't survive if one of the parts was missing. Like,
exactly.
If it didn't have the good soundtrack, you know, you'd just be strumming along to, like, air farts or something, and it wouldn't be the same.
Yeah, you couldn't do it if it was just regular video game music.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned before that clearly you guys couldn't go out and license some huge rock bands, so you did all the music. Was it done in-house, or did you contract someone for this? Tell us about the music in the game.
Yeah, we used two amazing Finnish guitarists who created all of the soundtracks, all of the music on the soundtrack. One of them.
And clearly, I'm asking you to do this because I looked at their names, and there's no way in hell I'm trying these.
Yeah, one of them, Samppa Siurala. He was the guy who made the music for Beatsplosion, the final stage where the insane challenge, which has this extremely fast industrial metal tune. We liked him so much that we got him back for this project, and he took half of the music duties. The other half was done by Mika Tyyskä, also called Mr. Fastfinger. Who,
see, I
was
could do
actually,
Mr. Fastfinger. It's that other. Yeah. It's the other one. It's like umlauts above the A and like two Y's in a row. I can't handle that.
Yeah, it can be challenging. Let's just call him Mika.
That works. That works.
Yeah. So he was actually involved with us all the way back in 2005. He was going to be composing the freestyle part of the Virtual Air Guitar game. And in fact, the music track that you hear on the very first level, that's a new version of that very original track that was prototyped back in 2005.
Oh, wow.
And these guys are really incredible guitarists. Not only that, but they have composed a soundtrack where every single song has five different lead guitar tracks.
And then I'm guessing, you know, the track just changes based on whether or not you're strumming or what kind of strum you're performing in the game.
Yes, that's correct. It's like a multi-track recorder where you're letting one of the tracks play at a time.
And I was surprised at how well it would flow, even when you're, you know, even in a frantic firefight where you're just strumming away and changing your strum methods because enemies are just flying at you. The song always sounded good. Like, it didn't sound jarring when you would switch things up.
And that's why they are really great guitarists. Because yeah, it places a lot of requirements on what you can and what you can't do. For example, you'll notice that a lot of the rhythms are very simple. There isn't much syncopation going on. It's always on beat, going ding, 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 not like dee, 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 dee. So
it's not like a Tool track.
Yeah, exactly. There's not a lot of progressive rhythms in there. It's very straight beat. It's a very straight beat that's it can sound simple, but on the other hand, that's also very powerful, and it helps the player get into the beat and into the flow.
It gives a nice driving, chugging, jing, 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 jing.
Yes, exactly.
Instead of like, I don't know, 8/16 notes and I don't know. I wish Chris was here. He would know what the hell. Kind of weird rhythms and polyrhythms and what I don't know. I'm not good at music. Can you tell? I like listening to it.
To music. Yes,
but the words, the music words and things, they don't brain good with me.
And that is why you make an excellent air guitarist.
Exactly. I have been enjoying the game so far. I've had limited time with it due to my old Xbox deciding it didn't want to live anymore.
Kind of
like our discussion before you joined the show, where I think my Xbox was trying to wrap a cord around its neck as well. But I did get through three of the albums in the game.
Cool.
And I have been having a blast with it, just strumming along, rocking out. One thing I did notice is in all the promotional material for the game, it shows the player on the left-hand side of the screen, but as a righty, I'm on the left, or I'm on the right instead of on the left. I can't word today either. All the promotional material shows you on the left-hand side, aiming to the right, where in the game you're on the right, shooting to the left. I'm guessing that's just because of, you know, body positioning of holding a guitar. Like a righty, their left hand is the one that is up in the air and would be the one aiming.
Yeah, this gets a little bit confusing because when you're standing in front of Kinect and you see yourself on the screen, we have to mirror your image so that you are actually looking at yourself as if you were in the mirror. But if you're facing a camera, then it would be flipped the other way around. So for people who play the guitar right-handed, the game actually scrolls to the left. It's the world's first left-scrolling air guitar Kinect shoot 'em up. I'm pretty sure it's the world's first and the only one.
Oh, man.
As for the promotional material, we just figured it would be easier for people to look at a regular scroller that scrolls to the right, because they're more familiar with games that scroll to the right.
I was going to ask if that was done based on familiarity with how shooters in general just move that direction.
Yeah.
Have you guys looked into possibly like adding some kind of mirror flip to the game to give people that proper moving to the right aspect, or did you find that was just too jarring if people would try it?
We actually do have a possibility to play left-handed. So for people who want to play the guitar as a lefty, you can go to the options menu and select that you want to play left-handed. Then the game will scroll to the right, but of course then you have to actually flip your hands so that your left hand is strumming and your right hand is aiming.
Yeah, my brain couldn't do that.
Yeah, that's... Maybe we should have called it the ultimate Jimi Hendrix challenge.
Oh, that could have been a good achievement in the game. There you go. If you do a title update with like any DLC or extra stages or something, just have like complete an album in lefty mode is like the ultimate Hendrix experience.
Yeah. You know, actually, the artist was left-handed and he helped us test the entire game in left-handed mode to ensure that everything was smooth.
I'm guessing so, yes. He's the one in all the promotional material?
No, that's me.
Is it?
Yeah.
Ah. I didn't... Are you a lefty, or are you just faking it for the images?
Yeah, I just flipped them.
Ah. You cheater.
Yes, that is correct.
Have you considered adding just a mode to the game where even as a righty, it would flip you and just flip the image on the screen to give you that traditional experience?
No, we haven't. We've been using the flipped camera image for many years already in many games. Even right when we started, it was obvious that it was just too confusing when your left and right hands flip sides. It's just the brain can't process it. Maybe you might be able to learn how to play after a few hours. But for a new game, when you're starting a new game, that's just not an option.
See, that could be another achievement. Fake it till you make it. Play in mirror mode.
Yeah.
I'm just shooting all these achievement ideas at you.
We need more gamer score.
Everyone needs more gamer score. I don't know how Microsoft does their title updates, but you know, there's a gold mine for added achievements in this game.
Oh yes, definitely.
Which I've been enjoying. I like I'm happy. One of the games we talked about on the show recently had achievements in the game like kill X number of enemies, but it didn't have achievement tracking. So I was very happy when I checked achievements in the game and I saw progress on the achievements in your game. They're like, kill so many enemies with this guitar. So thank you for having achievement tracking in the game. That helps us. We like that.
Cool. Thanks. Yeah, we've started to figure out what are the good choices when designing achievements already. So after a few games, you start to get the hang of it.
Now, you've done a number of Kinect games. Why do you guys... I'm just curious, because Microsoft themselves have seemed to completely just forget the Kinect exists, even to the point where me, with a new Xbox One S, does not have a Kinect port in it. Why are you guys still set on making Kinect games? Is it just a love for motion controls? Is it just an appreciation of the tech? Is it just saying fuck you to Microsoft, like, we're going to keep making these and you're not going to stop us?
I think it's a little bit of everything. I mean, you just pretty much described all of the reasons why we keep making Kinect games, but the number one reason is because people like them. There's nothing quite like seeing someone try out a Kinect game for the first time, and their eyes go wide, and they say, "Cool, you can do stuff like this."
That's me in the game.
Yeah, every time we show a game at an expo, there's always someone playing, and there's always people walking by, and they start rubbernecking. They turn their heads and go. You can see the moment when they realize that the player is actually inside the game. Then they start grinning and they start laughing. And that's just, how many games can do that?
Very true. I imagine that these kind of games are fun to have at conventions, because it's not just some guy sitting on a chair holding a controller and staring at a screen. I mean, it becomes a spectacle and an event where everyone is just like crowded around watching this guy play, and he's jumping around and, you know, in this case, strumming away and rocking out. And I'm imagining that that's just a fun experience to have at conventions, where every other booth is just people sitting.
Yeah, it's definite crowd catcher.
What kind of events have you brought this game to?
Virtual Air Guitar Air Guitar Warrior hasn't been featured at any events yet. We don't have anything scheduled at the moment, but you never know.
I would love to see you guys show up at MAGFest one year.
Cool.
In America.
Cool.
Yeah, it's basically like the only thing I go to every year. It's a convention in my area. It's just a weekend of games and music, and it's not like E3 or PAX, where it's kind of like business first. It's just a weekend of fun, and I think more Kinect games would do well there, because it's just such a loose and fun atmosphere.
Yeah, I think that sounds like a great idea. Definitely have to see if we can fit it into our travel budget.
That would be awesome. So yeah, how do your games perform on Xbox One? You said people enjoy buying them, and I love playing Kinect games. Are they still making... Well, I would have to imagine that they're making enough to continue creating Kinect games. Are they doing, you know, what you're expecting, or is the Is the market for Kinect games actually larger than most people would think?
Well, the market isn't growing. That much is probably obvious. But there's still enough people buying Kinect games that we can keep making them. Yeah. At the moment, we're unable to grow very large because the audience is small. We don't have a marketing budget. So it's all very underground at the moment. But we found a way to scope the games in a way that we can keep creating new games. It does mean that we have to release 2 games every year in order to just stay alive.
Yeah.
So that's kind of not very typical, considering that most game projects take like 1 to 2 years to complete.
Has player feedback been well? I'm imagining that people are enjoying what you're putting out, because I am.
We don't get a lot of feedback, actually.
Maybe they're just too busy playing the game.
I would imagine so.
I know the developer for another recent Kinect game, Fru, said that he was very happy with the critical reception. It seemed to be a very universally loved game. But he came out saying that he wished more people have been able to buy it and play it. Again, do you worry that Microsoft is just completely ignoring the Kinect at this point?
Well, I think there's definitely some truth to the target audience thing, because I think, I have no data on this whatsoever, but I think that a lot of people who would enjoy Kinect games don't buy digital games. They only buy games from physical copies from stores. And that's not something that we can get as an independent developer.
Mm. I was going to say, have you guys ever looked into partnering with someone like maybe Limited Run Games to do any kind of physical release of your titles, or even like a compilation?
We don't really deal with publishers anymore.
All right. Just easier to go alone?
Well, let's just say we haven't had a grand bit of luck with publishers. I mean, 3 of them have gone bankrupt from under us.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that you guys had that many publishers in your history.
Yeah, it's... Well, the Virtual Air Guitar game was obviously cancelled by both Sony and Microsoft for corporate reasons, nothing to do with us. And the publisher for Kung Fu High Impact also went bankrupt. After that, we were working on bringing Kung Fu into China. That publisher went bankrupt. And... one point we were making a game, a port of Kung Fu for smart TVs that would use cameras just like the Kinect. They were manufactured by PrimeSense, the company that created the original Kinect. And that company was bought by Apple, after which there were no depth cameras available on the market anymore. So naturally... There was no platform for us anymore.
And you guys have survived it all. Still chugging away. Literally with chugging in a guitar in Air Guitar Warrior.
Yeah. I mean, the team's grown a bit smaller since those days. But, yeah, we are still at it.
How big is the team right now?
Well, it varies. Well, it's according to the project. We use a lot of freelancers.
How big was the Air Guitar Warrior team?
It was 2 people full-time, plus the artist for most of the time, and a level designer. So 4 people.
And then are the musicians included in that, or are those just separate?
Those are separate. I count them as freelancers, but of course, their contribution to the game is so big that they were part of the team in that sense.
That's an impressive game for just four people. It blows my mind how there's some games out there, like Call of Duty requires 900 people just to like create one level. And then you guys, the work that you do with just four people, it blows my mind.
Well, you know, having a very limited budget and schedule forces you to be creative.
I know. I think it works. I think it works really well.
Yeah, it does. I mean, if we were a team of 100 people, I don't think we could have made the same game.
What would you do with a team of 100 people? If you had an unlimited team and an unlimited budget, what would your next Dream Connect game be?
Ooh, that's a good question. Well, the businessman in me would say that I would put all of those guys to work on a different project because the audience isn't growing. But if we could find a way to get 100 times more people to discover our new game, ooh, what would that be? There are so many great ideas that we've had to shelve over the years because they're too large. One of the ideas that was being tossed around was a full 3D version of Kung Fu from a third-person perspective using a 3D avatar.
That would be interesting.
We have a prototype where your movements are partially replicated and partially boosted by the avatar. So when you make when you do a sucker punch, the avatar throws a haymaker. And when you punt your leg forward a bit, the avatar does a roundhouse kick.
That's actually really cool. And is it just like the scope of the game is too large? Or is it like the creation of avatars instead of using yourself that puts something like that out of reach?
Mostly it's the content production. The vast majority of a game's budget these days is 3D art. In order to produce games that look the same as Call of Duty, we'd have to hire 90 artists and 2 game designers.
That's just something, I guess, as someone who isn't part of the industry, I don't really understand the financial aspect of things. Someone that we had on recently mentioned that creating an 8-bit game was cheaper than creating a 16-bit styled game. And in my brain, I'm just like, well, a sprite is a sprite, isn't it? Like, what is the price difference in an 8-bit sprite and a 16-bit sprite?
I don't actually even think that holds true. Making a pixel art game is just as intensive as making a hand-drawn game or a 3D game. It's just a different style. You still need the details. You still need to put effort to the polish.
Games are complicated.
They are. They are.
I could just write it off as games are complicated. It's above my brain power. So you mentioned that you're concerned about the shrinking Kinect audience. Are you guys looking into making non-Kinect games, or are you just set on sticking with the motion technology?
We are definitely looking at expanding into traditional games. Traditional meaning, you know, gamepad. But that doesn't mean we're stopping making Kinect games.
Are you considering like any kind of hybrid games that have limited Kinect functionality, but then also gamepad functionality? Somewhat like Frew had like the Kinect functionality was using your body to create bridges or pathways in the game, but you still use the controller to control the character in the game. Have you looked into anything like that?
I think Frew is a special case. It obviously requires the Kinect. It's not a game that you control with a gamepad, but becomes better with Kinect. It requires Kinect and the gamepad. It's a combination that without which the game wouldn't exist. So you still need to have the Kinect to buy it, and the audience is the same as for other Kinect games. So, but we don't really believe in doing things halfway, like adding Kinect on top of a gamepad game. It just becomes a gimmick. Mm. So either you go all the way or you don't do it at all.
Go big or go home, right?
Exactly. True works because it is a Kinect game. It just has this cool little added element of also using the gamepad at the same time. They're not like alternatives. They both form a whole.
Were you guys fans of Fru? Did your team play that game much over there?
Yeah, it's a fun little game that really shows you that people haven't really used Kinect much at all. A lot of the ideas are still out there to be invented.
It seems like a fairly small group of Kinect developers. Do you guys stay in touch? Do you guys work with each other? Or is it kind of like you just stay in your own yard?
A little bit, yeah. We talk with some Kinect developers, the indie ones mostly. But otherwise, we don't know anyone at Harmonix or Ubisoft or those bigger studios.
Have you guys considered trying to partner up with any of them and make a joint project sometime?
It's never really seemed like a thing that would work.
Part of me wonders how Air Guitar Warrior would have come together if you guys worked with Harmonix in some kind of traditional rhythm style way, in addition to just the shooter elements in the game.
It certainly would have been an interesting. It would have been an interesting design, but the problems are not so much on the design side. They're on the business side, unfortunately.
Mm. Again, stuff that's just way over my head. Oh, man. So what have you been playing these days? What are you enjoying in your spare time?
Me? Well, the latest game I've been enjoying is actually the new Doom.
Ah.
I know, it's a bit late for me to pick it up, since it came out last year already, but it's great. I thought I was, done with the AAA FPS genre, but I was proven wrong, happily.
It's never too late to get into a good game, because I personally have yet to play Doom myself, and it's been sitting on my shelf for a year, so...
I can say that it is satisfactorily crunchy.
Crunchy is a good way to describe a game.
Yeah, it is. It doesn't feel like the original Doom, of course. It just feels great.
Can you ever picture a way of mashing up Kinect with a first-person shooter?
I can picture it, and the picture is not pretty.
Have you ever considered an M-rated Kinect game? How would that work?
There was a brief discussion at the start of the Air Guitar Warrior project that should we make this an M-rated game? Go all the way with the hard rock cliches, showers of blood and explosions and guts.
Like a heavy metal?
Yeah, exactly. And, sure, you could do that game, but would it really reach a bigger audience, and would it really be any more awesome to those people who would buy it anyway, even if it didn't have blood in it?
Makes sense.
I imagine there would be a few people who would prefer it, the more violent version, but I don't know, it's more about the music, really. And it doesn't have to have the gore to make it more enjoyable.
That makes sense. I was wondering if maybe you guys have ever thought of like a Kung Fu Connect style game, but with M rating. So when you punch an enemy, you know, half their body flies apart. Just over the top violent.
We have, again, it's pretty, comes down to pretty much the same thing. It just limits our target audience too much. Kids absolutely adore Kung Fu, so we wouldn't want to make a game that the parents wouldn't buy for their kids, because True. Secretly the parents also enjoy the game.
Do you find parents and kids playing your games together a lot?
Yeah. I mean, obviously we don't have full extensive data on it, but I would imagine that Kinect games are a great way for parents who are gamers to play something that their kids can play too. Usually when you talk about children's games, you get this sort of sugary, over-cartoony thing that no adult in their right mind would touch. So we want to avoid that. We want to make games that are just cool games without having to rely on either, you know, big-eyed cute animals or explosions of guts. So we want to focus on what's actually fun, what's fun in moving around, getting up, jumping up and down, and being active yourself.
Speaking of big-eyed cute animals, I'm very sad that I have not yet reached the stage in the game with the pink background and the lollipops and the big-eyed cute blob animals, whatever they are.
They're candy clouds.
Candy clouds. That is fantastic. Yeah, that stage looks hilarious, and I really need to get a Kinect adapter so I could get back into the game.
It is the electric candleland is deceptive. It's difficult as well. It's more difficult than hell because it comes after hell.
How many stages are in the game?
So the game has 50 levels.
50 levels, good lord.
And we have, I need to actually count how many backgrounds we have. We have like, 39 backgrounds. Some of them have been reused a few times, but that's a lot of different environments. And you'd think it would be a horrible mishmash of everything, but they actually flow together really nicely. They even if you're jumping straight from Candleland to ancient Egypt into the pits of Pandemonium, the art style really ties it in together, and because it's all in the name of rock and roll, that's the common thing that everything draws on.
And it's just such crazy, crazy style in the game. Like the giant Viking ship battle boss dude in the water. Like there's monstrous bosses in this game. Just really cool designs too.
Yeah, thanks. I really think the boss fights turned out very well in this game, because you've got the hand-drawn animated bosses, which look totally awesome, and they're huge. They take up like half of the screen, and your Kinect image is a little bit smaller on the screen, a little bit larger than in Kung Fu, but still, the boss is like three or four times your size, and it's just super epic to be duking it out with a ghost of an ancient Viking rocker or heavy metal Ra in ancient Egypt.
And then the tons of different mounts as well. I know in the beginning you just start off with like riding a truck, but then you have sharks with frickin' laser beams, which is always good.
Obviously.
What are some of the other crazy mounts in the game that you just ride on?
Let's see. Well, I've mentioned the dinosaur already. We also have Rex 5000, which is the cyber dinosaur. And we've got a flying Piranha drone, which is like a flying dinosaur with lasers attached and a cyber eye. And we've got your traditional eagle, and we've got the Phoenix version as well. We have a tiger, which is really cool, by the way. Just look at him run. There's a candy cloud, a unicorn, a Pegasus.
Of course, and there's a unicorn. You got to have the unicorn.
It's a heavy metal unicorn. You'll see it when you reach it. It's got the devil horns.
Awesome.
What else do we have? We have a Viking ship and a flying Viking ship. Oh, and a flaming meteor. You get to ride through space on a flaming meteor while blasting aliens out of the sky.
It is just such an over-the-top ridiculous game, and I love it. Oh, man. Is there anything else about the game that like I haven't asked or that I'm missing?
Let's see now. It's got two difficulty levels. So once you've completed the game on normal difficulty, you can move on to expert, where you really have to fight for your survival. And by that time, you've probably also picked up quite a bit of air guitar skills. So you're able to, really make great sounding music at the same time as you're blasting exploding skulls. So it's not just a game that's a shooter. It's also a way for you to play music.
And it's enjoyable. It really is. I've had a lot of fun with it. Again, I am really hoping that I could get a Kinect adapter fairly quickly so I could dive back into it.
One more feature. Every time you defeat a boss, you get to make your own album cover. Which means Kinect takes a snapshot of you and places you in the on the cover of an actual heavy metal album.
And then that's when you say Xbox, take a screenshot, and you share it with your friends.
Yes, or preferably the whole world.
How many obscene album covers are you guys expecting to see from people?
Quite a few. I mean, the very first tester that we had over, well, yeah, the results were pretty much as you'd expect.
Middle fingers in the air?
Yeah.
Shocking.
Moaning the audience.
Do you guys get to see, like, when the game takes screenshots, is that data that you guys get to see?
No, we don't actually see any of the data that users don't specifically send to us or share publicly.
Do you find a lot of people, like, taking nude screenshots and sharing those?
Well, if they do, they haven't shared it with us. Which I'm kind of glad about.
I mean, there's been cases of, what is it, the Playroom on PS4 of people just, like, doing live strip shows or other obscene acts. And I'm just wondering if you guys have ever seen that on your end with your games.
Well, you know, we did have a serious, if rather brief, discussion way back in 2005 about possibly having to make a dong detector.
A dong detector. Oh my god. Is that technology that you've worked on?
It never left the concept stage, fortunately. But we did make some outlines about how it might work. In a technical sense.
I love that that's been discussed. Oh my lord. Yeah. Anna, it just seems like you give people a live camera and crazy shit happens.
Well, obviously. I mean, it's the selfie generation.
Kids these days. God, get off my lawn.
Yeah. I think we're kind of trying to make games for the selfie generation. I mean, when you take a screenshot of any other game, it looks the same as a screenshot from anyone else. But when you take a screenshot with a Kinect game, you're really showing the world that, look, guys, I'm in a game. Look at me. Don't look at the game. Look at me.
Look at my dong.
Well, if you put it that way, yeah.
So what's next for Virtual Air Guitar? I mean, you made your air guitar game. Where do you go from here?
Well, it's going to be very hard to top, I'll tell you that. I mean, how do you make an awesome thing even more awesome? That's a very good question, and I don't have an immediate answer for you. I guess you'll just have to wait and see.
I know you said you guys aim to do like 2 games a year. Are you guys already working on your next title?
2, in fact. We're at least looking at Boom Ball 3, probably to be released at Christmas.
Nice. I enjoy the Boom Ball series. Anything that involves smacking balls is fun with me.
There we go again. We know what people find enjoyable.
What other kind of ideas are you guys working on in-house?
Well, the other game that we're working on is still very much a secret. And we're not ready to talk about that yet. Because
any kind of hints? Subtle hints you can drop?
Ninjas.
Is it a Beatsplosion sequel?
Ninjas.
Oh, man. I'll be thinking about this. Is this something that you're aiming for next year or later this year?
That's still open. We're still, you know, in the concept stage, so we don't know exactly what the scope of the game will be, how much content it will have. So we don't have a schedule yet.
Yeah, because I know last time you were on Virtual Air Guitar, Air Guitar Warrior was something that you were talking about back then, and it's awesome to see it finally out. So I'm going to have to keep my eye out there for ninjas, Kinect ninjas.
You can't see the ninjas.
Kininjas.
Because they're ninjas.
Kininjas.
All right. And we're also working on something completely unexpected for Air Guitar Warrior 2.
Like a sequel or DLC or something?
Neither. That's why it's unexpected.
Interesting. A physical soundtrack.
That would also be very cool, but no.
I would totally buy a soundtrack for this game.
We'll have to ask the musicians. I think there was some talk about that. And I'll have to tell them that there's definitely interest.
Yeah, throw it up on Bandcamp and, you know.
Yeah, I think Mika is actually releasing a guitar workshop video featuring one of the songs.
That's cool. I know you provided our show with a medley of a bunch of the songs in the game that we'll be playing at the end of the show.
Yeah, cool. That features 9 of the 19 tracks that will be in the game.
I just wish it were longer. It's so fun to listen to, but it's just bam, 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 bam. It leaves me wanting more, which I guess is a good way to sell the game. Like, you want to hear more music, buy the game and rock out.
Mission accomplished.
Indeed. So give us one more sales pitch. By the time this episode is out, the game should be available now. How can we get it? How much is it? How many children's lives and blood does it cost to own? I figure there's got to be ritual sacrifice in there somewhere.
You don't have to sell your firstborn. You just have to shell out for $20. Air Guitar Warrior will be released on March 29th on Xbox One for a price of $19.99.
Awesome. Sounds good.
All right. And I certainly hope that, given the amount of air guitar that will be going on, we'll be at least working towards world peace.
And then the sequel is where you get Metallica and Led Zeppelin in the game.
Well, let's say that our goal is to make air guitar so awesome that they will want to have their music in the game.
Exactly. We will see Metallica live streaming the game.
Yes, exactly.
Aki,
we will see them riding dinosaurs.
I would watch that. I would watch a stream of Lars Ulrich just riding it. Get me off this fucking thing. It's just, man, I can't drum from on top of this dinosaur.
I know, right? That would be so awesome.
This is crazy. Everyone's going to see my bald spot from up here. He's trying to hide that hairline so bad. Not working, man.
Now take Mika, for example. He's the guitarist, and he's an awesome air guitarist because he's actually played the game. And he's good at it.
Nice. I can't play the real guitar, so... I've dabbled with the bass a little bit, but not anything where I could actually, like, perform a song.
That's another idea for a DLC. Air Bass Warrior.
Ooh. So you're just getting all the ideas from me. Two achievement ideas, bass DLC. That'd be fun. Get, like, see if you could get Les Claypool involved in that.
Yeah, cool.
Some Primus original music for the game. That'd be cool.
Oh, yeah. Hey, do you want to ask him to compose 5 different lines of bass lines for the game?
He might. He's insane. Les Claypool's crazy.
That's true. So. You got a point there.
Oh, man. Aki, it is a pleasure having you on the show. Again, for everyone out there at home, the game should be available right now as you're listening to this for $20 on the Xbox One. Aki, do you have any final words to wrap this up?
Rock will always live on.